All right, lads, how often do you change your underpants?
It's time to talk.
I'm listening to you on the radio at this time every morning since I'm at least 2 years old.
They blocked me from trying to get a refund. It's just appalling.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
You couldn't make it up, lads.
All right.
The voice of Cork.
Neil Prendeville Show. Like? I don't know, man. In association with Elevate Credit Union. Text 0868-104-106. Bit of a traffic advisory for you this morning because all the EU heads are on Lee side. Ursula von der Leyen, a lot of them, I think they're lording it up and living it up at Hayfield Manor, and why not? But motorists, be aware. Public transport users, be aware. Road closures and traffic destruction because of our overlords on Lee side. We're looking at places like around the Western Road, around the College Road, Jail Walk. It says Goal Walk here, but I'm assuming it should be Jail Walk. Anyway, expect delays across the day today, particularly in the afternoon. And bus services as well will experience delays. So I'm just letting you know it's going to be a difficult day trying to get from A to B. Anyway, text 0868-104-106. Be part of the conversation. Paper-wise, this morning, we now have photographs, fairly disturbing photographs that would not have been capable of being used heretofore until the evil Riyad Bouchakar was found guilty of carrying out knife attacks against innocent children. So we know now, of course, that he will face up to a life sentence in prison. Now, it's going to be put back now for sentencing, so we have to wait and let that happen. But the Sun this morning carries a photograph of the evil Bouchakar lying bloodied on the ground after the knife attack on innocent children. The monster tried to murder three children and has been found guilty of all of those knife assault crimes. So his photograph makes the front of the Sun today. It's the first picture of the school attacker. Incidentally, there's quite a lot of detail as to what happened on that day, where you had several members of the public making dramatic interventions, attempting to save the lives of the group of children attacked by Bouchakar. The Mirror picks up the story this morning where they say those that intervened included a creche worker who went to protect the children, a Brazilian delivery driver who used his helmet to hit Bouchakar, and a French teenager who was in Ireland for just a month before the stabbing, who also came to the children's aid. Now, Bouchakar is an Algerian national, but he's lived here for 25 years and he's an Irish citizen. So when he goes to jail, it's quite interesting as to, you know, what's going to happen next. We'll have to wait and see. But if it's life, you know, let's say if it's 10 or 15 years, I don't know what it would be. Anyway, it would be 100 grand a year. So in a decade alone, it would cost the state €1 million just to jail the beast. But the Examiner this morning have an excellent recap of everything with regards to this man, 52-year-old Algerian, Irish citizenship, here for 25 years, guilty now of 8 charges in total for the attacks on young schoolgoers, Parnell Square East, November 2023. That then, as you know, sparked the Dublin riots across Dublin City and left, you know, after his attacks, he left one girl with life-changing brain injuries. We heard a lot of detail throughout the court, but one of the papers actually managed to talk to the mother of one of the young girls seriously injured in the stabbing attack. And she said that actually she herself and her family are also migrants. And in the past, when she'd be walking down the street with her children, she would have people shouting at her and the children to go back home, But the Examiner this morning talk of Leanne Flynn. This is the creche worker. And she came to the aid of the children that she was attempting to look after. So it was like 3 weeks of evidence. But the Examiner say that this Bouchakar was upset because he failed to secure social welfare payments, right? He was upset about it. So he goes back to his hostel and he arms himself with a 36-centimeter carving knife and he walks to Parnell Square where he asks several people for the location of a school. I mean, isn't that absolutely alarming? It's beyond alarming. So he waits then for about an hour and he notices the 13 primary school children. They're 5 or 6 years old. My apologies, you know, if you're upset by what I'm saying this morning, but it needs to be said. So he sees the 13, this is the Examiner article, it's really well put together. 13 primary school children, 5 to 6 years old, lining up to be taken to an after-school creche, all right? So he takes the knife then out of his rucksack, which is strapped to his chest. He moves quickly and he moves quickly towards one of the little girls and he stabs her in the chest and he perforates her right ventricle of her heart. This is appalling. The creche worker that I mentioned, Leanne Flynn, drags Bouchiker away and she gets stabbed in her back as she does so. All right. Then passers-by intervene and they manage to knock him to the ground. That's as much as I'm going to say. There's a lot more in that article, actually. It's absolutely appalling. So thanks be to God, anyway, this fellow's been found guilty and he'll be taken off the streets. For how long, I don't know. We will just have to wait and see. There are other stories in the papers this morning from our courts. Incidentally, because there is a legal aid dispute and legal aid solicitors are not taking legal aid cases, bizarrely, there's been a drop in the amount of people being held at the moment in Cork prison as a consequence. Numbers are down only fractionally, but you know, it's still way over capacity. You might have seen Tommy Gould actually, you know, very passionately talking in the Dáil this morning with all of the broken promises from people who live in and around the Rathmore Road area and up around the Glen. They're going to get two super prisons now built into one. The old one will be knocked and it'll be built as a big super prison. So, like, don't you think at this stage you should be looking at greenfield sites outside of residential settings, for God's sake? But anyway, there's a guard got a suspended sentence. Sometimes I wonder about sentencing in the Irish courts, and unfortunately I'm hearing all too often of judges who are giving suspended sentences for lots of different reasons, up to and including that the jails are full. That's not good enough. Somebody needs to go to jail, they got to go to jail. But anyway, he got a suspended sentence for punching his daughter in the face. Who does that kind of thing? It was a cruel assault. There was an argument at a home, apparently, about the smell of his cooking. There is no excuse good enough for punching people like that. Your daughter, who does that to your daughter? But like a George Magdalena, he attacked the young woman, completely lost his self-control. It was a row. She came back from a family night out at a concert. And he got himself a six-month suspended sentence. The daughter sustained bruising, swelling to the face, psychological, emotional consequences, amongst other things. But again, in court, they heard that he had an unblemished record before that. I don't know. There's other stories then involving you know, different forms of assault. I remember talking on this topic on the air some time back, on a number of occasions actually, and that was assaulting referees. I believe it's harder and harder now to get people to ref games because of their own personal protection and safety. There's an example of it in The Sun today. The Gardaí, this is a Gardaí investigation. It's a GAA ref who was allegedly assaulted officiating at an under 15 game. I've seen some of the videos of it overnight actually, and some of the players are angry. To say the least, they're angry young men. They say a lot of the time it's people on the sidelines and parents but are behind a lot of this stuff. But the ref is in his 50s. He sustained injuries. He was overseeing a match in Clare, an under 15-year-old match, and been a couple of sending offs and a bit of an altercation ahead of the alleged assault of the. But that's where we're at now, where refs are being assaulted. In, you know, all too often we're hearing about these stories, and then they have to be escorted. I mean, he ended up on the ground. Why in the name of God, like, does a referee end up on the ground and he's trying to officiate a soccer match or a GAA match or anything like that? And then, I don't know whether you tried yesterday. If you did, I would love to hear from you. This EV pilot scheme, July 1st was the day that people could apply for the 5,000 euro scrappage allowance and add that on to the 3.5 grand EV purchase grant, which means you get 8.5 grand off an EV car. If you were lucky enough to snaffle one yesterday, because it went live at 9 o'clock this morning. The entire system, I believe, crashed at 9:15 and didn't come back on until 45 minutes later. And the entire allocation of 2,000 applications was gone within an hour and a quarter. Gone. Such was the demand for them. Did you get one of them on Leaside or across the county or indeed across Munster? If so, please let me know. Text 0868104106. If you did not get one and tried and failed, let me know. I'll be coming back to this morning. Text 0868104106. I can tell you that according to the English Times this morning, the cheapest, not just the cheapest car in England, but the cheapest electric car is the Dacia Spring. Now, Dacia is owned by Renault, their Romanian-based car company. They make very decent cars. I've driven a few of the SUVs in the past, like the Sanderos and the Dusters and stuff. But now they have a Dacia Spring Electric in sterling for 12 grand. So it's the cheapest new car bar none, but also the cheapest electric car. And interestingly, I mean, I'll come back to the different stats on EVs and stuff like that. But if you were successful yesterday, let me know. And if you weren't, also let me know. Text 0868104106. This Labour mayor story is not going away. The Mail are not stopping on this one, where she said she came to Ireland in 2000. and six after the murder of her husband in Nigeria. But she didn't actually come in 2006. She came in 2005. Her husband was not married and murdered in 2006. He wasn't murdered until 2010. And this false narrative was being spoken about and trotted about for like 15 or 20 years since that. And only recently did she delete her website, and did the Labour Party correct all of the information. But even the Labour leader, Ivana Bacek, has been dragged into this one now, because in the Mail this morning, they're saying that she falsely told party members that their newly elected mayor of Galway came to Ireland in 2006 after the assassination of her husband. And that's not true. But I suppose, how was Ivana Bacek to know that it wasn't true if she wasn't told it? And other types of leaders, you can scale it up from Lord Mayors right up to presidents. Donald Trump is saying this morning, quoted in this morning's Independent, that he apparently had a video message up last night saying that he thinks he's going to go over to Doonbeg for the Irish Open later this year. He says, I think I'm going to go over and I'm going to see it, and we're going to go and watch Rory and all of the other great players. It's going to be something very special. Could you imagine, I mean, whatever security there is for your EU leaders on Lee's side today, imagine the amount of security we'd need for Donald Trump if he comes to the Irish Open. And if he comes to the Irish Open, isn't there a good chance that next year he'll come to the Ryder Cup as well? I mean, he's absolutely trousering the coins. The Mirror this morning say that he coined 1 billion in euro in crypto cash. And that's just what we know of, against the amount of money that Trump is making at the moment. They say, according to the papers, that he raked in 1.6 billion euro in his first year back in the White House. Most of it from cryptocurrency. Now, I don't know if there's anything untoward to see in here, if we had any inside information or anything like that. All I know is they're saying he made 1.6 billion in the first year of his presidency. I think the two wealthiest people, did I read at the weekend, that the two wealthiest people in Ireland are the Collison twins behind Stripe, I believe, and I'm open to correction on the numbers, but I believe they're both worth something like 78 billion each. Something like that. Mad money, anyway. Mad amounts of money. Anyway, the papers this morning also talk. I love the headline in the Examiner where they talk. You know the show One Foot in the Grave? This headline is One Foot in the Grange, because Jeremiah O'Connor Funeral Homes have bought the Grange Bar. Now, apparently they have bought it. Not clear exactly what they're going to do with it next, but they bought it for in and around $1 million, I'm told. This is the pub restaurant. We don't know at this stage, according to the Examiner, as they're going to whether they're going to repurpose it and turn it into a funeral home, or, you know, I mean, whether they might keep it on as a pub or restaurant or residential. But it's interesting because the Bull McCabe on the Airport Road sold recently for 730 grand. But that's not going to stay on as a pub or a restaurant. I think that's going to be repurposed, I suppose, for want of a better word, into residential units. And then you had Reedy's Wine Vault, the vault bar on the Western Road. That's got a planning application in now for Son of a Bun to go in there. And that changed hands earlier this year. So a lot of the time when pubs are sold, they don't continue on as pubs. And then, of course, you're talking about people with loads and loads of money. I love this one from the English Times this morning. I don't know whether you know it. I only learned myself over the weekend that Taylor Swift is getting married. Good luck to her. So she's getting married in Madison Square Gardens, apparently. And for that occasion, they are building a castle inside in Madison Square Gardens. Imagine if you were a guest at that wedding. Guests will have their phones confiscated on arrival, and each guest going to Taylor Swift's wedding will have to sign a non-disclosure agreement to keep your mouth shut. You won't have any phones, obviously, so you can't take pictures. And on it goes. And it's expected that this week of star-studded celebrities will go on for a number of days. Now, that's none of my business. Her own money, and she's delighted that she's getting married and everything. But could you imagine if you did manage, just think, if you did manage to sneak in a phone, right? Or if you had dull Google glasses that nobody knew anything about, and you managed to take a photograph, could you imagine how much that photograph would be worth? You know, I mean, you're talking a million, 2 million, 3 million, 5 million, I don't know. But big money. But NDAs and confiscation of phones. A lot of sporting stories making the papers this morning, and a lot of stories then regarding music, I see. And, oh, I mean, Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. I know I've been saying that a lot recently, but that's just the way I feel. Canada now has been left into the Eurovision Song Contest. I mean, why not? There are lots of other countries that have nothing at all to do with Europe, and they're in the Eurovision Song Contest already, including Australia. So bring it on. Canada competing in the Eurovision Song Contest for the first time next year. God only knows as to whether Ireland will be competing or not. I have no idea. And then, with regards to why can't we just leave things alone? I have like no disrespect meant for lesbians or eco-warriors or people who are worried about climate change. But why in the name of God do we have to have Shakespeare's Othello transformed into a lesbian eco-warrior, where apparently I'm told the main plot behind Shakespeare Othello is the threat of climate change? Like, he must be turning in his grave. I mean, it's interesting, like, the way they adapt things these days, isn't it? I mean, I managed to get through 7 minutes, I timed it, before I turned off Wuthering Heights, the new version of Wuthering Heights. It's just beyond appalling. Maybe I'm old school in these kind of things, but if I am, I'm okay with it.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
All right, straight to the phone lines we go. Fiona, good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. You might find this interesting, right? Let me just read this for you, because you'll find it interesting. It relates to, mm-hmm. kind of indirectly to what you're saying. Neil, don't give up my details, but I work for Busairn. The place is a shambles. They're employing drivers with no experience, struggling with English, and often ending up doing whatever they want on the roads because we can't communicate properly with them. The buses themselves are in a shocking condition, water leaking on top of drivers, cabin doors locks are broken, so there's no safety for the drivers, no heating, no air conditioning. There's supposedly 120 drivers arriving from South Africa soon, which is concerning, as fraudulent licenses are easy to get over there, I believe. We've just had a dozen mechanics arrive from the Philippines with zero English. We don't have electric buses. We have hybrids, which are extremely unreliable. Too many managers getting big salaries and doing nothing. Isn't that alarming, Fiona, when you hear a bus driver telling me that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have been there. I've got on a bus to Blarney on a Sunday. I waited for an hour, and when I got on the bus, I was going out the Old Mallow Road when I discovered where am I going. The driver stopped, got caught nearly in the bridge, the old bridge. Then we realised people started saying she's going the wrong way. Then she tried to turn the bus at that distance, which was very, very dangerous. She made her way back. She came down the side road, went over a flyover, which she turned off to the wrong bridge. Everyone was saying, we're going the wrong way, but she automatically stopped on a flyover with a lot of young adult kids. Boys, I remember, got off on top of a bridge, which was very, very dangerous, Neil. I was like, oh my God.
Wait a second, people got off?
Yeah, it was like a flyover, a little, you know, over the main road, which she shouldn't have turned off that way either. So she stopped, the doors open, people started to say, you're going the wrong way, but... Or like that, our English wasn't great. Then she continued. We came out another back road. There was a car coming towards us, a black Merc. I'll never forget it. I thought we were dead. I went flying over the seat, hit my head. Then
people, as in the bus nearly crashed into the black Merc, is it?
Yeah. And then she came into Tower, which was the wrong turn again, and people said, you missed my stop. You're after coming the wrong way. But she continued to drive, so I got up off my seat. I'm sorry, I'm rushing you. And I turned around to say, excuse me, and I was in bits. I started ringing my friend, texting, I don't know what to do, I'm in a bus that doesn't know where it's going. She thought I was having a joke. She was like, really? I was like, yeah, this is generally happening. So it was people terrified, saying, stop the bus, stop. So I made my way to the thing, to her, and I started to say to her, you're going the wrong way, I'm after getting hurt, why are we here? Like, it's the wrong turn off, you're in Tower now. She was like, I don't know this route. I'm only training.
On her own?
So I was like, you're training, but why are you behind the control of a bus when you're only training? She says, I don't know this route yet. I'm only a trainer. I said, you need to pull in. Then people said, I said, pull in the bus. And she was getting all agitated and worked up. She didn't know where to stop, where to pull in. But eventually a guy did say, you need to pull in. So she pulled in, we guided her to Blarney, we got to the stop in Blarney, and it was literally full of people on a Sunday, and they were trying to get on, and she was like, no, one can't come in, I have to pull in the bus, I can't go any further. So they had to call another bus to come out and do that route, where there was a lot of people waiting, people upset, people missed their stops, and it was all over the place. Like, I'll never forget it.
Okay. Mm. So there's a lot to unpack here. Have you got a little time now? Because I don't want to be keeping you under pressure. But
yeah, I'll be going down about 5 minutes.
Okay, grand.
So, I'll just keep my eye on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was she actually capable of driving? Okay, so she didn't know where she was going. She didn't know the route. But was she capable of driving a bus in the first place?
No. She wasn't. I'll be honest with you now. From what I have experienced and seen, number one, she didn't know the route. Number two, she wasn't aware of where to stop, where not to stop. She stopped in a place where kids could have got killed. She stopped in areas, and I mean, she literally told the truth. Like, I'm only a trainer. I'm not, you know, more or less, it was like, I'm not qualified enough to be control of a bus. I mean, how many people's life was in her hands that day? And not even knowing that she was going onto roads that she had no iota of. She didn't know where she was. She was doing all the old routes, you know.
So she was in training, and she said that.
Yes.
But if you're in training, you would have a trainer with you, training you. Like, right. If you were learning to drive, you would have a driving instructor with you.
Yeah, well, then I could see then that she knew herself. She was in a panic mode. And who pulls in a bus? People start to say, like, if you're not...
But she should not have been put in that position in the first place.
No. And it came to the thing where people started to say, well, you need to park it. You need to park it, because they overheard when I said, like, how come you don't know the route? Like, you should be after doing this. And she said, no, I'm training.
Okay,
I'm training.
So taking wrong turns, going up on ditches, stopping on flyovers, nearly crashing into other cars. She had no control of the vehicle. She wasn't familiar with the route. Did another driver have to come and take over?
We went into Barry, we got out, my friend came running towards the bus, and she started to say to her, like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you could have killed people. She was literally saying, I don't know. And people were starting to get on, and she was like, no, no one can come. There is another bus coming for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So she was clearly upset herself.
She was.
And were you hurt?
Yeah. Yes, I came flying. It was my hand. Bounced off of the when she tried to turn. You see, she was caught between the Mallow Old Bridge and the thing, and she tried to make a turn back that way.
Were people crying on the bus?
They were more or less terrified, you know. They were given this look, where are we going? First of all, they didn't know where we were going, because as you know, when you have your routine, you know your way back and forward. So, I mean, she wasn't even given the directions.
There's going to be, she was put in an awful position if she's in training. She clearly should not have been driving that bus in training.
And that
unaccompanied.
Was last year.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
And I did meant to complain it to the bus officer, because I think
there's going to be an accident. Someone's going to be hurt or killed, or there could be a very, very serious event if there's drivers with that that amount of lacking in experience. It's just not safe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have to leave you.
All right. All the best. Take care. Thanks, Fiona. Appreciate it. I'm a former bus errand driver myself, and I can tell you, the training is shocking. Our only route training was to go on a bus as a passenger and take notes. The first time I ever drove my route, I was on my own picking up passengers. We drove a double-decker for the first time only a few days before being left out in double-deckers on our own. Thank God I left. Terrible place. Morning, Neil. Bus drivers are being recruited abroad with very much substandard. There's a grant available to companies to do this. Come back to me and give you a little bit more information with regards to that, if you don't mind. And thank you for the text. Did you know that Bus Éireann has an office in India for the recruitment of drivers? I did not. I heard from a recently retired bus driver from Mahan to Apple that they have 40 minutes to do the route. 40 minutes. I think there are between 42 to 48 stops along the route. The buses have GPS. I think this is why they are driving fast and breaking red lights, which I've experienced myself. It's the 202 and the 202A. I wondered actually yesterday as to whether bus drivers, or some of them, are breaking red lights because they're under pressure, where they have a limited time to do the route. And that's not good enough either, because someone's going to get killed. There's going to be a serious accident or crash. You just can't be running red lights. yesterday by Paddy the Farmers. This driver broke a red light and completely blocked the junction. I didn't get through two green lights because of him. Somebody sent me a photograph and there's the bus just idling in the middle of the yellow box. Bus Éireann are taking on 50 new bus drivers from Africa and they've been put up for 6 months free of charge. After the 6 months, they must find their own accommodation. The new bus drivers are seriously getting their licences from a lucky bag. My husband has been driving a bus for 20 years and these new people they're hiring have zero idea how to drive, never mind how to drive a bus. Well, they must be absolutely desperate if they're going all over the world trying to get people to come to Ireland to drive Bus Éireann buses. Is the job not attractive enough for people who can drive buses, willing to learn how to drive buses, and sit behind them and get a job with Bus Éireann? I mean, why is it that Irish people don't want to do the work? People that know the road? Why isn't it Cork people who know the city don't want to do the job? A lot of new bus drivers have foreign licences, Neil. Irish penalty points can't be put on them. The bus on the 220 route is hydrogen powered, not electric, like a caller said yesterday. And there's reams more of these. I mean, like, it really is an issue, lads, because this is day four now that I've been touching on this topic of conversation. It hasn't got away. It's just got worse. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are things?
I'm good, my brother. I'm good. You were a Bus Éireann employee for a number of years, yeah?
Well, about six and a half years ago now, I was with them before my present employer. And
okay. Did you drive buses?
I actually did. I went away and paid for the license myself here in Cork. Now I still do a bit of part-time driving.
Okay.
With a local contractor here in East Cork, and I quite enjoy it, and that's why I kept my hand on it. But
why are you no longer with Bus Éireann? Tell me about your time there.
So I was with them about 6.5 years ago, maybe seven, and I was with them for about 8 months. But first of all, I suppose look, I have two young kids, and for Bus Éireann, it's not really family friendly, you know. Their shift patterns are kind of all over the place, and it just didn't suit me with two young kids, you know. And I suppose from an employer side of things, look, I suppose Bus Éireann once upon a time was one of the best jobs in Cork. I think it was back in 2013 when they lost, when the contracts kind of changed. For example, working on a Sunday or going in on overtime for a state body or a semi-state body, there was no such thing as time and a half and double time. You just got your flat rate and stuff like that.
It became less attractive as a job.
It did.
Okay.
It did indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you're in there, then I suppose as a newbie, you're on a different. Like I suppose they say you have to apply for a board. When I say a board is a route. I was on. No, being a local, look, I was fine. I knew the city, but you were on different routes every day, and then you were working off an app, and you had to see where you are. Kind of get a week ahead. And if you want to time off, then the only thing I found a bit unprofessional when I was there, but I don't know if it's still the same. If you want to time off, you had to put a bit of paper underneath the transport manager's door, and there was no system to reply to you saying, yeah, your day off is granted, or it's an appointment or something like that.
Okay.
And you could be told to go, you could be getting a phone call on the day you wanted off. Where you should be picking up the tour too. I applied for the day off. I said there was no system in place.
Okay. So there's a lot of kind of picky issues that, you know, didn't make it attractive for you to stay. But trying to hone in now on the standard of the drivers. No disrespect meant to those that are sent out in training on their own, which they shouldn't be. But I'm worried about that.
Like when I first started with Bus Éireann, even though I went away and paid for it. Like it cost me almost €3,000 to do that license. So I went away and did the license myself. But when I went into Bus Éireann, I had to do another 3 week. I'm going to say a 3 week course, but that was just to get to know the ticketing system. And then the instructors inside there would bring you around all the routes of Cork City. And that's just only Cork City. It doesn't do the long haul routes as in the county areas, you know. But they mainly keep the new fellas to the Cork to the city routes. But I did another 3 weeks. So and I was competent behind the wheel. But what I had to do to get my license, I sat my license, I did all the driving lessons, I sat it twice. I failed it the first time and I got it the second time. And it was quite intense.
Okay, so you did the training, it cost you €2,500, and the training that you did was training how to drive a double-decker bus.
Well, when you get a what we call a full D license, you have a full D license, can you drive any coach, double decker, 54 seater, whatever.
Okay, so when you did all of that, then you got the job to drive double deckers in for Bus Éireann. What training did you get when you joined Bus Éireann?
I got a 3-week course, and when I say course, it's just basically how to use our ticketing system, and which is probably the first week, and then the other 2 weeks is basically just driving around Cork City, getting to know the routes.
Okay, on your own or accompanied?
No, accompanied. Like there was about five of us started on the same day, and so you'd have five of us, and then you'd have a Bus Éireann conductor, I suppose you're trying to say the word.
Okay, and would you say that after those couple of weeks in training with being chaperoned, that you were competent then to drive the double-decker bus?
Competent because I was local to my city.
Okay.
That was the only reason.
Okay.
And if
why
I was someone coming in with our narrow streets and narrow roads going through Cork City and a double-decker bus, I would be very, very nervous.
And can the drivers that are coming here from overseas, somebody said there's 120 drivers arriving from South Africa as an example.
That's correct, yeah.
Will their licences be legit, and will their licences be transferable to drive buses in Ireland? What's the deal there?
Look, as everyone's saying, and it is true, I know, as we all know, and it is true, there's no point in beating around the bush. In the Far East, we can get the lucky bag licences. And as far as I know, if you get your licence in South Africa or in the Philippines, you can go to another EU country, I'm not going to say in the country, and they will give you an EU licence, and then you come to our lovely country, and they say, yeah, your licence is grand, we'll give you an Irish licence now.
Okay, and what kind of training then would they get?
3 weeks. Because they're classed as a competent driver with that full licence.
That's very worrying.
You know what I mean?
That's very, very
and,
worrying.
Oh, yeah, if you can imagine, I think there's 96 passengers in a double-decker bus, if not more, and you're putting a foreign, that's supposed to be a competent driver, behind the wheel of that bus, and then we have to, as well as a bus driver, we have to do the CPC courses as well.
So the woman who crashed the bus in Dublin, do we know whether she was a competent driver? Do we know, did she get confused or panic? Or do we know as to whether it was a medical event or what?
I don't know personally. I won't be in a position to comment on it. Like, but once Bus Éireann see that full license, like it's all there, all the management are thinking of Bus Éireann is full license, get them in, get them trained up and get them on the road. It's all numbers.
Okay. So we now are recruiting for Bus Éireann drivers in India and in South Africa, and we're recruiting for the mechanics of those buses in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That, but like, can I just say one more thing as well, Neil? As well as having, it's quite strange. Just like, I have a full coach license, right? And I also have the SPSV license, which is the taxi license. And now I'm probably just jumping away from the Bus Éireann, but I'm just going to our foreign, the taxi drivers as well, like, you know, it's the same system. The license can be got in the lucky bag in the Far East, and then they go to the EU country. It's the exact same system. Now, the only thing that I worried about, I sat my SPSV license here in Cork, which is very, very difficult. I sat it three times, and there's two industries. You have industry knowledge and local knowledge. I passed the industry knowledge on my second go, and I passed the local knowledge on my third go. So if a local person, as in me, takes three times to pass that test, how can you tell me that our foreign friends are passed?
Because they have to only follow a route. They're not going to be driving a taxi. They have to have the taxi drivers must have a form of knowledge of all of our streets. Now, I know there's a lot of foreign drivers driving taxis who are incapable of getting from A to B without Google Maps. I know that. But it's much more complicated driving a taxi, I would think. Well, in one way it's more complicated driving a taxi because you don't know where your route is going to be. Do you know what I'm saying? If I'm making sense?
Oh,
because
I do.
Yeah, like a double-decker bus, okay, that's a complicated... I could not drive. I've got a driving license for, I don't know, 40-odd years, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a full no-claims bonus. And I know all of the streets and the roads and I know where to go. But I wouldn't be able to drive a double-decker bus with 40 years experience. So if somebody comes to this country and gets 3 weeks training, how can they know how to drive one?
But it's the exact same thing. I know it's a big vehicle, but like when you're carrying, you're even as a taxi, it's a public service vehicle, you're responsible for those passengers, either a big coach or a small 8-seater or a 5-seater taxi. You're behind that wheel. You're responsible for them. So like, They really need to look into this whole licensing system in Ireland. And even like, sorry for keeping you out again, but I'm at the second stage of doing my driving instructors here in Cork. I recently passed. So for me to do the driving instructor, not for a bus, but for a car, I had to sit my driving test again. My theory test again. My second stage now is I have to do my driving test again. And the third stage, when that comes, I'll actually go with an RSA tester. But
it's very, very strict. My motorbike license lapsed there years ago, and I just didn't bother renewing it. And I said, I'll get around to it. I never did. And now, if I want to go back again and drive a bike, or even a moped, I was thinking of getting a moped, I'd have to do a 12-week driving course on bikes.
Yeah.
Before I get a feckin' license for a 100cc moped. So in many ways it's strict, but it doesn't sound as if all of the boxes have been ticked here with regards to bus, air and drivers. Let me get some more people on here, Tony. Appreciate your contribution. Have a good one. Cheers, pal. Text 0868104106 after the break.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Yes, be careful out there. Be careful out there. It has to be said again, Irish people won't do the job. I've heard advertising campaigns on radio and television and billboards and everything over the last few years. I'm just saying, just putting it out there. Bus Éireann, I don't know whether it's the same for Irish Rail, for train drivers. Oh my God, I hope to God everything's okay there with regards to training. But they've been flat out advertising for bus drivers here for years, even at an extended campaign there recently looking for female bus drivers. So they're absolutely desperate for staff. And if you can't get them in Ireland, maybe there is an attraction to throwing the net wider overseas, trying to get people to come over. But it's a very, very important job. I mean, it is carrying our most precious cargo, right? Anyway, Jennifer, good morning.
Morning, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for the text and thanks for jumping on. So you were off to Dublin a few weeks back, heading towards the tunnel. Go ahead.
Heading towards the tunnel. It was a Saturday morning. It was 6:45. And just at the slip road up for Mahon Point, here's a double-decker bus coming down towards me. And that road, as you know now, it's like a dual carriageway. It's 100 kilometres an hour. There was about five cars around me. And in the distance, a double-decker bus coming down the Mahon Road.
Slip road. To join you, yeah.
Coming down, facing us. And
facing you?
He had facing me, yes.
Oncoming traffic.
He's coming towards me, yes.
Oh, for God.
He came down the up slip road.
Oh, for God.
And there was about five cars around me. We all had to stop, like come to an absolute halt, let him come down. And I could see he had his numbers up. But as I got closer, his number changed and he turned it to zero. So he couldn't be identifiable, I presume. And he was a foreigner. He was a very black man. And he came down onto our road and did a U-turn and swung towards the tunnel.
God almighty.
Can you believe it? A double-decker bus.
So there could feasibly have been a six-car pile-up with a double-decker bus.
Absolutely, absolutely.
My God. Now,
crazy.
It's hard to read into the reasons why. Was this a shortcut? Yes. Mistake? Didn't know where he was going.
I imagine the stake or someone who's used to driving on the right-hand side of the road and just, I don't know, just it was an absolute mistake because how can you do that?
Oh, my
God. How can you do that, you know? Yeah.
When was this? Just a few weeks ago?
About 3 or 4 weeks ago,
Were there passengers on the double-decker bus?
I didn't see any passengers. No, I was looking. I was that close and I was there. Yeah, I could see the whites of the guys. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
So he came down an upslip and joined you and facing into oncoming traffic. Okay.
Then he
stopped on the dual carriageway and turned the bus around in a U-turn to go the right way.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there is going to be a very, very serious incident on the basis of what I'm hearing over the last few days. Would you agree?
It is scary. Yeah. You have to be on your way the whole time. You just don't know who's going to do what.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jennifer. Appreciate that.
Take care.
Bye-bye. I use the bus regularly and the drivers break a lot of red lights. It's crazy out there. It would appear to me that Bus Éireann would hire anyone. Listen, we have been in touch with Bus Éireann at Capwell. I'm quite sure that even as I speak, Seamus is probably back onto them again, wondering why aren't you responding to the media requests and the questions that we've asked you and the details that we're looking for. This all started on Monday with regards to a bus incident. But I've had no response whatsoever. And hopefully at some stage, I mean, sometimes people think, okay, well, you know, if we just ignore it, they'll go away. And, you know, sometimes that's exactly what happens. If you ignore it long enough, things sometimes go away. brown letters through the letterbox usually don't, though. But a lot of other things can. But anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. I know this is one that I'll be coming back and forth to because people just keep on sharing stories on it. I'll talk to Michael in a moment, if you don't mind. But there were other great news yesterday with regards to Willie's salmon. And I will be recapping on that again this morning because we managed to get €400 for the 3 kg salmon that Willie then caught yesterday. It was in and around 3K. It's a beautiful freshwater wild Lee salmon swimming up the Lee. So that €400 then will go to Penny Dinners. And then Benny McCabe jumped on, the great Benny McCabe, the publican on Leeside, and he contributed an additional €500. So when you add it together, I suppose you could technically say that the Lee salmon made €900. And that money will go to Penny Dinners, which is amazing. I didn't think it would happen like that, but, you know, when people hear of a good cause, they just want to jump in and get involved. And also yesterday, we spoke a lot about going on holidays and the amount that you pack, right? And this is very true in many cases. Not in my own. We take the same size suitcase, 10 kg. Now, if you're going away for 3 weeks and you're going way out foreign, you probably would need a 20 kg. But John says, going away for 10 days, ready to go. I have a 10 kg bag and I will be absolutely fine. The missus will take a 20 kg bag. Just go figure that one out. I'm not even going to begin to, I can tell you. Not even going to begin to. Let me get a call in this side of 11. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Ian.
Michael Dennehy has a story for us. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was coming down Douglas Street from Ballastree one day, right?
Yeah.
And as I came down, there was a double-decker bus coming up towards me.
Okay.
In Douglas Street.
Okay. Right? Is Douglas Street part of a double-decker route? I wouldn't think so.
No. So if you wanted to go up, you'd go up to South Terrace, the old Hortons used to be.
Yeah, you would. Yeah.
Right? But they told this chap, turn left. So he turned left, and he hit a car. I stopped my car, I went down to him. I asked him what was wrong. He said, they told me, take the left. No, so you can't come up here. This is you never get this bus up. You tear all the wires down. So then the fellow from the Capital station came down, bus station came down, and they backed the bus. They backed it back. Like, when they're sending out chaps like that, that don't know the place, they should send a man with him to show them what way to go.
This gets worse and worse. Thing. Was it an overseas driver who was learning to drive?
He was, yeah. Because I asked him, say, where were you going to? Up to Knocknaheeny.
Stop now. Don't make me laugh, no, will you? Please, no, don't make me laugh. What is he doing?
No, he was going up to Knocknaheeny. That's where he was going.
And where was he coming from?
The bus station.
From Capwell?
Yeah.
Did he have any training at all on that route that he'd go down Douglas Street? I mean, even if you look down Douglas Street and you're driving a double-decker bus, you're going to say, I'm not going to go down there. It's wrong.
No, you would, that's right. The bus wouldn't go. You couldn't do a park on the left.
You can't get two cars down there because, for some extraordinary reason, and it's none of my business, you can park on Douglas Street, yeah, which is should be one way anyway. But
It should be, do you know what I mean?
So, did he hit cars?
He hit a car. He damaged the back of it. And then he didn't move the bus from where he hit the car. So they from the Capwell station, or you know, maybe a foreman or something, came down. And they backed the bus.
Like,
I didn't see any more than I pulled out then.
I kind of feel sorry for drivers like that, Michael. Here's a man who wants to come to Ireland, get a job, settle down, and he's put behind the wheel of a bus with little or no training. Can you blame him?
No, yeah, I know, yeah. He has no other choice, you know what I mean? But like you said, that the code on Capwell, they should send the man in the bus when a new driver comes in to show him the route. And God, he moved over that way.
Oh, my God. Going to Knocknaheeny Vila, Douglas Street. That's the worst I've ever heard, man. Thanks, Michael. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
bye,
it.
Take bye, care, bye, pal. Bye.
And what happened with the damaged car? Do we have any idea? You probably don't know.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I don't know what happened there.
Probably came back to their car damaged, wondering what happened here.
Well, they couldn't move it, and they phoned the owner.
Well, at least that's got, okay. The owner of the damaged car, well, at least that's something. Appreciate it, Michael. Thank you. Text 0868104106. We'll pick it up after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. And right across the week, it's day four today of our wonderful overnight giveaways for the Sandymount Hotel in Dublin. Beautiful, charming coastal setting. You're right on Sandymount Beach Strand, and you can head off to the beach or go for walks or whatever. It's a gorgeous hotel. So we got dinner and breakfast, overnight stay for two of you. And tomorrow we upgrade that prize to include a Dublin Bay cruise from Dublin City to Dunleary. So it's a lovely, lovely prize. You can also jump on the dart, head into Dublin City. You want to do a bit of exploring, maybe go to a gig, bit of shopping, bit of food, whatever the case may be. So we'll be talking on a topic just before midday today, and we'll take two callers on that one. For an overnight stay for two people with breakfast and dinner at the Sandymount Hotel. Further details, sandymounthotel.ie. We also have our wonderful family passes to all sorts of beautiful tourist attractions across the county. And I'm going to stay with Spike Island again this morning with some more family passes for Spike Island. For all of that then, a little before midday today. Quick shout out to Tomás King. He got in touch with me yesterday. He said I was on your show earlier in the month and when I helped out a lady with her car. I got to chat to you about my brother who recently passed away, and I've been doing different runs in his name throughout the month. Today is the last day of the 31 runs that I've done in honour of my brother Dara, where we've also been raising money for Pieta. Well done, Tomás. You told me you were going to do it, and you did. All around Carrigaline to Crosshaven, all around Ringaskiddy in that area. At some stage you had 30 or 40 people running with you. And on your last run, which was yesterday, 150 helped. That's a wonderful achievement in the name of and in the memory of your brother Dara. So well done, Tomás, and well done for raising money for Pieta House. That's a beautiful thing you did. Text 0868104106. Back to the phone lines we go. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are
okay,
you?
No, I've other stuff to do, but I'm happy to stay with it as long as people are getting in touch like your good self. So go ahead.
Yeah, just new round about the buses there and stuff, right? So we decided to get an event off into town there on Friday night. It was ourselves' birthday, so we jumped on the bus in Talker, right? So we're coming up to the first set of traffic lights. And you know, the bus, whatever, 40 mile an hour, the bus is going, you can feel it kind of slowing down. And I looked, we were up in the top deck, and I looked, and the light was green. And he slowed down and stopped. And I was like, what is this fella doing? And then the light went orange and red. And of course, herself looked out in and she says, it's a red light. I said, hon, come on, Nola, watch this. So we went on. The next set of lights we came to, down by the lock.
You mean he drove? He drove through them when the light went red?
He didn't. He stopped there. He stopped at the green light. And then it went orange and red. And then obviously it went from red to green. And he drove again. And then we came down by the lock butchers. And I said to watch now. You could feel the bus slowing down, like. I said, look, the light is green. She was like, what? And next thing, the bus comes to a stop. The light is green in front of us. The bus comes to a stop. Next thing, the door opens. He lets two people off the bus.
And a traffic light?
Yeah.
You're winding me up now. Come on, stop that.
I'm telling you straight.
No, you're a wind-up merchant.
I'm actually only delighted that other people were seeing it as well, that herself seen it. Like. But he stopped and the light was green. The door opened. He left two people off. And next thing, he stayed there. Light went down.
He let them off at the traffic lights at a green light.
At a green light. He stopped at every green light. We went through five sets of lights. Four of them were green and he stopped. One of them was red and obviously he stopped at that as well. But he left these people after. There was a bus stop 50 feet up the road. But
what
he left them after.
What training are they getting, man?
I tell you, none. I'd say genuinely no, none. And it was only, I was actually glad that herself seen it because the first one, when she looked, the light was red, she was telling me the light is red. But I said, hon, it was green, like. And then we came, as I said, to the next one, it was green.
How many times did that happen?
Five sets of lights. One of them was red when we came to them. The other four were green. And he stopped at every one of them. He was stopped, the light was green, the bus was stopped. And then it went orange, red, and then it went back to green, and he went off again.
I have to say, this is a bus Aaron issue. This is, okay, there's common sense involved in driving a bus. Hang on a second. There's common sense in driving a bus. I get that. But I don't want to turn this into a pylon against drivers who are getting little or no training. Do you follow me?
But so come here, would they not tell them, so, look, whatever about the training, there's a green light. Green is for go, red is for stop. You know, like, that's basic. Like, I know in some other countries, like, if you're on a roundabout, you have to stop on the roundabout to give someone a right of way to come onto the roundabout in some countries, right? But surely a green and red light is universal around the world.
Like. It is, 100%. That's just common sense. But I do not want this. The last thing I want now is somebody getting on a bus and giving a driver from overseas or maybe from the African continent grief. I don't want that to be happening. Obviously, they're so desperate to get drivers that they're going all over the world to get them. But from what I can see over the last few days, the standard of training leaves a lot to be desired, and it's going to be a very serious incident. You heard before 10 o'clock, a driver of a bus from overseas driving a bus errand bus went down the wrong way on a slip onto the ring road and came on in front of six oncoming cars.
But for Neil, that's only reading plain English, right? There's a sign up there. You can't go down this way. Turn back. Like, why are they driving down there for? That's plain English, man. Like, that's nothing to do with where a person is from.
No, I know. I know.
It's signed there for someone to read. And, like, you're saying that they're struggling for drivers. Like, there's people out there, they say the same. I've two boys at home that are after handing out about 50 CVs to places. They're told, oh, you have to be 17. The 16 is all the told you have to be 17. The 17-year-old is told you have to be 18. One of them went for work experience through school. He was offered a job within 3 hours of the work experience, right? No, it didn't come to fruition because the place he was working in, I don't think it's as busy as they were expecting, right? But there's youngsters out there that can't get a job in shops. And the shops are saying, oh, but we have to employ. We'll go and look for someone else.
But how old are they, the youngster? Are they looking for summer jobs or part-time jobs?
Yeah, part-time summer jobs. One fella's itching. He done a barber course a year and a half ago. My kitchen will be destroyed 2 or 3 days a week because his body's overcutting their hair.
How old is he?
16 years of age. And when he hands in the CV, they're telling him you have to be 17. And then the 17-year-old went into two of the same places and handed in the CV.
It's all changed. Those glory days of part-time jobs in the summer are all gone.
But Neil, they're not gone at all. There's other people getting the jobs.
Not at that age, they're not, no.
Do you know the same as Bus Aaron?
Bus Aaron can't get it. Bus Aaron can't recruit in Ireland. They have to recruit overseas.
So what's the problem there? Why can't they recruit here? Is it the wages? Is it the hours? You, the man on a while ago, said there's no overtime, there's all flat time. What's the problem there?
I just hear there's a very bad vibe in there. I just hear over the last couple of years, very bad vibe in there.
Well, someone needs to go in there and shake it up.
All right,
you
okay.
Know, like, to be honest, like, you know.
All right, stay safe. Thanks for that. Appreciate it, Tom. Text 0868104106. I've got reams of calls and loads of texts, which I will come back to throughout the course of the morning. But can I just staying on motoring matters, because we all heard and everybody was celebrating and lauding up the EV pilot scheme that was announced by the department, where you get $5,000 scrappage allowance on top of the $3,500 EV purchase grant. There were 2,000 application limit available, right? Which meant that 2,000 of these grants, which would total $8,500, were available. And the portal opened yesterday morning at 9 o'clock. It crashed within 15 minutes. And then when they managed to reset it and get it back up again, all of the 2,000 grants were gone within an hour and 15 minutes. Now, I was talking with the dealer yesterday who told me that they would calculate and estimate that somewhere in the region of 6,000 people yesterday were looking to avail of those grants. And then you even had dealers online yesterday, and I picked this up on Instagram, apologising to customers. Now, the boss man from Mooney's in Deans Grange up around Dublin explained it very well, and this is a portion of what he said yesterday afternoon.
The government have set out to issue 10 million in grants. We assumed it was 5,000 euros grant extra, which is 2,000 cars, but in actual fact, they're including the original SEIA grant of 3,500. So there's only 1,200 cars in total, approximately, for the entire country, split 65% for the urban areas and 35% for the five cities, which means it's 400 cars for Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway and Waterford. Now, that 400 cars will break down to maybe 100 and odd in Dublin City. So there aren't enough cars to go around. There aren't enough grants to go around. A lot of people will be disappointed. There's nothing we can do about it. I just want to apologise to our customers.
That probably represents many more of the major dealers right around the country. Conor Faulkner, an independent motoring expert with CarZone. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Hi.
Did they make a dog's dinner of this?
Well, it's a bit complicated and it's far too small. And we knew right away that it was going to be far too small. I actually had the chance to talk to the minister directly about this last week, Neil. And he's pilot scheme, and if successful, they'll, you know, look favourably on doing something else. But I mean, it was obvious even before the scheme went live that not only was it going to be successful, it was going to be heavily oversubscribed. We had dealers who, you know, the dealer would do all the admin for you. The consumer just has to say to it, and the dealer will prepare the application and all the bits and pieces.
Okay, that line is breaking up just a little bit there. Just move around. I actually saw that interview that you did online. I checked it out last night, and he kind of glibly told you during that video that you did with him, it wouldn't be such a bad thing if it was oversubscribed. Like, is that, that's not a very nice thing to say. It would be a good thing if we disappoint people.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a sense, it's a victim of its own success, but it's been completely obvious, even since before it started, that not only is it going to be successful, it's going to be oversubscribed. Now, scrappage schemes, we've done them before, Neil, and they can be really helpful. They can really, really work, but they've got to be more comprehensive. Have to reach more people. I mean, essentially, he just dipped a toe in the water to say, would there be an appetite for this? Yes. Overwhelmed with the response. So what does he do next?
Well, he exasperated an awful lot of people. If the figures are right, it meant that there was only 100 applications for the grant available in Cork, the biggest county in Ireland, yesterday.
Yeah, so as I say, he's styling it as a pilot scheme. Do we still need to debate that? It clearly is a success. There's no doubt that people want it. So is he going to do more? And he hinted to me that he would, and he's getting that in both ears from the motoring industry. I think if you were the minister tomorrow, Neil, one of the things that he has to do is that actually this is revenue neutral, that there are extra car sales being generated here that are generating extra tax for government. I mean, if he's simply giving away tax money on cars that were going to be sold anyway, that's great for the punter that gets the grant, but it's not great for the exchequer, and it's not really causing more EV sales, which is what we really want to achieve.
But did the dealers buy in all of those cars, anticipating that their customers... Are dealers now stuck with thousands and thousands of electric cars as a consequence of this?
Well, no, I think dealers always knew from the arithmetic from day one, Neil, they always knew this was a pretty small scheme. So, you know, in the totality of their business and the stock that they had on order, I mean, a lot of EV people now at the moment, or EV dealers at the moment, their problem is getting stock in from manufacturers. A lot of them will have ordered that kind of well in advance. And this government scheme, when it came along, look, even before we saw it working, Neil, my comment on it was that it was very fiddly and very complicated and very... and the dealers all thought the same thing. So, you know, it's going to be a positive for those who are lucky enough to get the grant. And it clearly demonstrates to the rest of us that there's a huge public appetite for a scheme like this if you do a big one, if you do it properly. But the only thing I'd say in the minister's defence is that he has... and that he'd see how the pilot worked. But look, what, we're 12 hours into the scheme, we knew it was heavily oversubscribed, and more was needed.
Okay.
That's his answer now. It does work. So what does he do next?
Okay, so we'll wait to see what happens next then, because I was reading an article this morning that electric vehicle sales are pretty much 25% of the market so far this year. And they figure that by the end of the year, it could be higher than 30% of all cars sold by the end of this year will be electric. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Even in spite of maybe
charging points or the cost of electricity.
Yeah, it is pretty good, and it's going to keep rising. And there's a few different reasons for it. More and more electric vehicle model types coming online at more and more different prices. So the technology is much more mainstream now. People who are wary about it are willing to go to it. And also, of course, the fuels. Electric vehicles are much, much cheaper than petrol and diesel, provided you can charge them at home. If you're fully reliant on the public charge network, you're not.
Forget about it. You'd be better off not having one in the first place. You wouldn't.
Yeah, well, the public charge network ultimately is not for the right cars. For most EV users, public charge network is the thing you go to when you're stuck. And you know you're going to get charged a bit extra, but it's not where your car charges every day. That has to be at home, really, for the economics to stack up.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks for taking the call, Connor. Not a great line we got there in the end, Connor Faulkner with Carzone. It was a good idea, but very, very, very short on allocations. If there was, like, it was 65% of all of those available grants went to all of the counties of Ireland except Dublin, Cork, Limerick and Waterford. Like, the Dublin, Cork, Limerick and Waterford between them got like 400 of those grants. And Cork's a big county, you know, it really and truly is. It's massive. And, you know, you're looking at 100 for Cork, 100 for Dublin, 100 for Waterford, 100 for Limerick. It's kind of gimmicky. I'm told that there was about 6,000 people applied for those grants yesterday. And, of course, just a quick recap on it. This is where you scrap a vehicle that's more than 13 years old. You get the 5 grand scrappage and you get the 3.5 grand EV purchase, which is 8.5 grand. And if you want a smaller car, like a starter EV car, one of the cheaper ones, that's a massive saving. It really and truly is. And you got to wonder as to what he's thinking about today, the minister, as to, well, that was hugely successful. Maybe they just don't have the money. Maybe that's the problem, to go back and say, OK, we're going to reopen it again and we're going to up it to another 5,000. Either way, text 0868104106. I did see an article in The Independent yesterday where the government is being urged to tax mileage instead of taxing fuel, as petrol and diesel revenues will fall significantly. The introduction of distance-based road charges should be considered once tax revenue on petrol and diesel starts to fall. And it will start to fall, guaranteed. Petrol and diesel will start to fall when more and more people are driving EV cars. So would it make sense, I wonder, whether you should be taxed per mile instead of, 70% excise on all fuel? It's just one I'm throwing out there. Everybody will move ultimately. And I was talking yesterday about the BYD, like a BYD SUV, say, for instance, could well soon, and they're saying it will be very, very soon, have a range of 1,000 kilometres. That really takes all of the fear of range out of the equation totally, doesn't it? And apparently that's just around the corner. Literally. Text 0868104106.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
He says, goodbye. I can't listen to your show anymore after about 20 years of listening. You're all for the immigrants coming into our country, taking free money and committing crimes. Oh, well, sorry to lose you. I'm not quite sure that you're 100% accurate in your sentiment, though. Neil, the vast majority of attacks on referees happen to happen during GAA games. Is that right? I'd love to see the statistic as to where you can back that up, saying that there's more referees being attacked in GA games than there is in soccer or whatever the case may be. Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868104106. On electric cars, just on the expense of charging electric cars, Neil, it's only more expensive if you charge in public places. At home, charging is cheap and for free if you have solar. Absolutely. And if you've got a smart meter and you charge your car overnight or your SUV, whatever the case may be, it's at an even lower rate again. But it's the public network. Connor Faulkner said that very well. You get creased on the public networks. You'd be better off having a petrol car. But if you're charging at home, it's different. The ESB has raised their public charging rates, making it way more expensive per 100 kilometres than a diesel or a petrol car ever would be. Yeah, again, that's another one. Stay away from the public charging. They're only in the case of emergency, isn't it true? Neil, have you seen the new Leap motors? No, I don't know a whole lot about EV. I was never at all interested in electric cars. My wife has a hybrid plug-in and it's fantastic, don't get me wrong. But I always had an issue because I don't want to be running out of juice, whether it's petrol or diesel or electricity. And so the whole range thing, I was never interested. But if you're talking about €1,000 range, that changes things usually. Emer, she is right regarding EV. Bills have gone through the roof. EV drivers are a bit precious, you see, and they'll tell you it's the best decision they ever made. But you're saying that they're telling porkies they're precious when they really don't believe that it was the best decision they ever made. Is that it? Home charging is the only way. I have an electric car. The night rate between 11 p.m. and 8 a.m. is the rate I use. And solar panels as well make it even cheaper. only as expensive as petrol or diesel if you're in a garage or a public network. You're spot on. Lots then on snoring or sleep apnea or issues with regards to partner snoring. I suffer from sleep apnea. My partner tells me I snore a lot and very loudly. I got this little device, though. It's like a mouth guard. It's in Boots for €55. My partner says it's working, or at least it's helping. Thank you. Glad to hear that. Don't give on my details, but I was going out with a girl last year, and our first night of her staying over at my house, she spent the whole night kicking and digging at me over my snoring, while she herself was the sound of a small tractor. After that night, I told her, don't ever come near me again. If she thought it was appropriate to kick me out of my own bed the first night she stayed over. People need to get a grip. Don't be so rude over something the other person can't control in the first place. Sorry, my apologies. I wasn't prepared for that, right? That's my problem. I didn't see that text coming. But I love it. And it's in my head. And I have a visual video of it, which I'll have for the whole day. Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868104106. That was a relationship breaker, wasn't it? That's for sure. A bit of a ball breaker, I suppose. Francis, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Okay, back to buses. Go
I ahead. Was going to see you, H, on the 214 about around 2 weeks ago, 2 to 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right. And there was a black lady driving the bus.
Okay. Now, that's okay. Only relevant, is it? Because of her possible driving skills.
Because of the stories that I'm hearing this morning.
All right. Okay. Okay. All right.
Right. Everything was fine. Do you know the stop that you'd come to before you go to Wilton Shopping Centre? There's a roundabout.
I know the area very well, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't because I come the back roads, okay? Before we got to the roundabout, the lady pulled up the window. That's the only time I noticed she was black because she put her head out and said, where do I go?
Who did she say that to?
Anybody, she shouted it, you know? And I was like, oh, Jesus, I will be no help to her because I couldn't tell her which lane to go into. So,
well, she opened the cab window and asked the passengers where
yeah,
they were.
Oh, yeah.
For God's sake. Right. Okay.
And you know, that roundabout is very busy. So the 214 actually goes into the CUH A and D. It stops in there. So this lady came up from the back. She was lovely. And she said, this is where you go. That's the lane you go into. And the next stop you come to will be Wilton Shopping Centre.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. The passengers now are directing bus drivers.
God, I have a very sick relative in CUH. I swear on his life. Okay?
I know, I'm not doubting you. I just find it
yeah,
hard to believe.
Because my battery is going to die.
All right, go ahead, go ahead. Yeah, go on.
So, I knew that after Wilton Shopping Centre, there was an even bigger roundabout that she had to go around, you know, to get in the sideway of the A&E
yeah.
department in CUH.
It's a junction, yeah.
I was like, flip this, I'm getting off. I got off at Wilton Shopping Centre. There was no way I was going around the roundabout. Now, I've used the bus loads of times. It never happened before, and it never happened since because I checked that lady on the bus. She really did not have an idea. Now, if it had only been me and her, we'd have been still stuck there because I wouldn't be
so
able
she
to
asked the passengers on the bus, where do I go? She didn't know which probably which lane she should have been in, is it?
Which lane and where was she going? I was like, oh, Jesus, I'll end up in the hospital myself before I'm finished.
That's bizarre. Yeah. Let me warn you, lad. Something's going to happen as a consequence of all of this. Thanks, Francis. Appreciate it.
A lovely lady came up from the back and did put her on the right road. But I wasn't going to take the chance.
I know.
She was going around to the hospital roundabout.
Bizarre.
So I got off at Wilton Shopping Centre and walked. Okay.
All right. Thanks for that, Francis. Appreciate it. That's where we're at now over the past 3 days. Some Very, very, very worrying calls and texts, but that's right up there, isn't it? If passengers now directing a bus driver how to negotiate the roundabout because the bus driver says, where do I go now? What kind of training? I mean, I've asked it already. I've been getting nothing back from Bus Air. So we've been trying to phone, we've been emailing, we've gone to Transport for Ireland. I'm not even quite sure where the Transport for Ireland is handled by an answering service or an office in Ireland, or whether it's a call centre overseas. The whole thing is just all over the place. But Seamus is on it. But do keep the stories coming, because one way or the other, Bus Air and certainly Capwell. And I don't actually think that it's anything intentional. I don't think anybody who's in management or dealing with the kind of issues like this goes out of their way to mess up. I really don't think that is the case. I just think maybe they're just so desperate that they got all sorts of corners and all sorts of ways. Anyway, let me stay with the call. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. What have you got for me? It involves your son, I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I know this is probably a sidestep to the buses, but my son did his theory test for the bike in the 5th of May.
What bike? An electric? Is it a motorbike?
A moped, a 125. So right. He passed it and did his theory test and everything. He's already driving on the road on my car since
September.
Did he
do a 12-week course?
No. So, that's for your driving. He did that. But for his motorbike, you just go back in and do the theory test with the NDLS, which he did.
Before that, you got to do a 12-week course.
No. So that's an IBT. You do that after you get your license.
Yeah. So he's got to do that before he can drive it.
Yeah. So he did the test end of the 5th of May and he passed it. And we went online and it said you couldn't reapply online for the license through MyGov, that there was an issue, that you had to go in person. So he did, he paid and he went in person. And he's only 17, so this is his first time going on the road on a bike. And he went in person, paid for the license, did the photos and everything inside in DLS by Anglesey Street. And they said the license would be out in 3 to 5 days. So in the meantime, I took him bike shopping and he bought a bike, which is amazing. At 17, he was working. And he bought a 261, brand new bike.
What did he buy? I'm just curious.
An RKS 125. Saved all his money, bought it himself.
What did he pay for it?
He got it off the lovely gentleman in Damien and Lee Motorcycles, just shy of $4,000.
Good company. Around for decades and decades.
My father passed away a few years ago and he was a biker. So he wanted to do the tradition and we're big into cars. And that's what I was saying to the girls, the researchers. My brother's actually in Japan. He's a drifter. So bikes and cars are in our blood. And he wanted to get on the road. He chose the bike option. So we did that. We did the right thing.
It's a beautiful bike.
And it's sitting in our shed now and he's looking at it every day since. So we
Why?
Did the right
sure,
thing.
Sure, like he's done all of the... What's stopping him?
He's done all the work. So when we went in on the 5th of May, he paid for... He did the IBT. Then he went into the NDLS by Anglesey Street. I think it was a week later. He did the pictures. It said he was licensed out in 3 to 5 days. So in that time frame, we rang a gentleman for the IBT, which is a training course. It's a 2-day training course. And you do that. So we booked that in May and he said his next available date was the 26th of June. And I was like, okay, fine, fair enough. He has to wait kind of 6 weeks to get on his bike. God love him. He'll look at it for 6 weeks. There's nothing we can do about it because it was the summertime. Everybody that we rang had said they're all booked out because it's the summer and everybody wants to learn how to ride a bike and get out on the road. And I said, fine, fair enough. So we paid that gentleman the €100 deposit to hold his slot. So we were waiting for the license and we had nothing. So we started calling, we started emailing. So much so, yesterday we went to go in and into the NDLS. They wouldn't let us in because we've no appointment. We've sent countless emails and phone calls in the last time. He still has not received his license.
And they said it would be out 3 to 5 working days.
3 to 5 working days. We are now July. He still has no license. We had to forfeit the money that we paid for the IBT for the 26th and the 27th, which was last week, because it was a non-refundable, even though I booked it 8 weeks in advance. So now the bike is
5 weeks later, he hasn't got the license that should have arrived within 3 to 5 days.
Exactly.
Did he go back in again?
Yes, we went back in again yesterday and the gentleman on the door who's security wouldn't let us in because we have no appointment. When you have no appointment with an email, you're not allowed in the door. And I was trying to explain to him that we have countless emails showing, I was saying, because I worked in a call center a long, long time ago, is there an escalations team? Is there something? Even yesterday...
Is there any number to ring?
It's the same number. And even when we came out yesterday and we were driving out of town, I rang on my phone and I My son was driving, obviously, and I was on hands-free, and we were explaining, and this man was absolutely horrendous on the phone, pig ignorant, explained. I had all the dates of the emails. We gave him the application ID. We gave him the payment details, everything, and he just said, oh, it could be processed by Friday. I said, is there any way that you could outbound me an email on that so I have something to prove that it could be processed on Friday? But he said, oh, if it doesn't on Friday, it could be Monday. So I said to him, are you saying that it's going to be printed on Friday or printed on Monday? No, I can't tell you that. He said there's a huge backlog of 2 to 3 weeks of people that sat their test, and the system has to be manually uploaded. We've heard this off numerous people. The system has to be manually uploaded, so there's a huge backlog. So anybody that did their test in that 2 to 3 weeks, God love them, whether it's man, woman or child, still has not received their license as far as we can see. So now I'm out €100 for his IBT. His bike is sitting paid for, taxed, ready to go. He has all the gear in the shed since the first week of May, and he can't get on the road.
It reminds me, I don't know whether it's still the same, but it reminds me of the chaos with passports. Similar thing
100%,
happening.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And I feel so
can they not look and say where you are with regards to the journey? You know, like, can they not see at what stage the processing of somebody's license actually is?
It's on a manual portal and you can log in and check your status, but it's at the same status for nearly 4 weeks.
What does it say?
What is the application?
Just says pending.
Wait for approval. So they're waiting for approval. So anybody, God love them. I said to my husband even, are we the only ones in this? Because I haven't heard it on your show and we're 5 weeks in.
No, I haven't heard it. We may get more, but I feel for your son because he sounds like a great independent lad and he's got himself sorted. And you know what I feel from on the basis that the summer will slip away from him.
Yeah, so now we're looking at it. When we spoke to the gentleman that we paid the IBT to, his next available is the end of August.
You know, these things should be efficient. You know, they should be fast and they should be efficient and they should happen. We're not short of technology to make these things happen seamlessly, quickly and efficiently.
That's what I said to them. I said, they had said it's like the passport when you can do it online. That's the whole reason the public service card and all that came out, is that you're able to do all these things online. You don't have to go in and burden people. Because even the other day I renewed my mom's passport online. So easy with her public service card and my gov.ie. It was all done, dinner and there, and paid for the
Did the post arrive this morning?
Yeah, still not there. Okay. We checked it. He logged online.
Right.
There's nothing there.
So if you log online, it would say sent, wouldn't it?
It would say updated or something, but it's still saying waiting for approval and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
It's exasperating. I don't understand.
Exasperating. It really is. Let me see if other people are suffering similarly. But
thanks so much, Neil. I really appreciate it.
And good luck to him on the road. If he'd gone for a 50cc moped, he'd have none of this nonsense. Sure, he wouldn't.
I know.
It ain't the same thing as a 125, though, right?
Yeah, no, definitely not. Definitely not. He wants the cool looking bike.
Yeah, no, they're okay, lovely. Okay. I'd love one of them myself. But could I just briefly ask you, what you say about your brother? Is he living in Japan?
Yeah, he's there 10 years. He was living in Fukushima, which is by the nuclear attack, that was there many, many moons ago. So he was living up a mountain, working with a gentleman there, a very well known drifting place, and he was doing all the mechanics for them, but he drifts out there as well, and now he set up his own company and he's doing it out there. He moved down from Fukushima, kind of closer to Tokyo, but he's there 10 years and he's married and he'll never come home. Absolutely loves it.
You got sick to death of eating sushi yet? No,
and like, he speaks the dialect. It's unbelievable to hear him, like, with his wife. He speaks, there's four obviously dialects in the area, but he speaks fluent with her. It's unbelievable, and his lifestyle changed. He's like unbelievable. He was quite a heavy set boy going out, but he's lost almost, I'd say, 8 or 10 stone being outside there, and just the lifestyle is just amazing.
It's because their diet is so healthy. Reason why.
So healthy, and the people are so lovely. His wife has come here a few times and beautiful.
So what's, just quickly, just explain to people what drifting is. It's not just drifting from A to B. What is it?
No, so at the moment he has his own company, so he repairs all the cars. So anybody that would be on a track, so there'd be certain times, speeds and certain allocations and points to be on the track, and he would repair a lot of the cars. So at the moment he's actually going, he kind of got in with a great few people, and he's going to San Francisco, he's been to LA, and he's repairing the cars over there.
So they're on a track and they seriously oversteer, don't they? So the back of the cars all over the place. Yeah, but they're still in control, right?
100%. Now, he right, just does it for fun at the moment because he's gone down into the... He was always a mechanic. He did his apprenticeship here and he just loved it. He just met a fella in Mondello and he just said to him, just one day, would you ever interested in going to Japan? And my brother kind of laughed saying, yeah, right. And he was like, no, I can have you in Japan in a few weeks. And my brother thought nothing of it because he was working for the ESB at the time.
Amazing.
And it was a pensionable job. And he was like, yeah. And my mom was like, no. And that was it. He literally within 6 weeks later, he had his car sold, his tools all boxed up. He was gone on a flight. And that was it.
Sometimes you just have to go for it. Well, listen, lovely chatting. Do stay in touch. Fingers crossed for your son. It's very exasperating and frustrating, but that's the world we live in these days, you know?
100%. Let's see what happens. I really appreciate it. Thanks
okay.
so much for taking
All right.
my
phone. When he's on the road,
day.
Thank you. Take care. When he's on the road, make sure he stays safe and oh, he will. Wear a headlight. Sorry, wear a helmet and obey the rules of the road. I'm sure he will. Text 0868 104 106. He's got a break on the way.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And to some extent, unfortunately, texts continue to come in with regards to chaotic bus habits with regards to drivers. Can't come on, but my cousin works for Dublin Bus for only 2 years. Had great training and great to work for. And great perks. Listening to this bus driver's stories is nothing strange. A few weeks ago, I looked out my window to see a bus outside, lost. I live in a park off the Ballinlock Road. He left Bory Manor Road and had no idea where he was. Most people actually got off the bus while the driver was trying to negotiate his way out of our cul-de-sac. Another one, the bus drivers are in such a panic, they regularly pass the bus stops. I use buses every day and some drivers don't know their routes, full stop. Whatever accident may happen, the taxpayers will end up paying for it as a consequence of compensation. Well, I'm not even interested in issues regarding compensation. It's just people's lives, safety and injury. With bus drivers coming into Ireland to drive public buses, how will they afford to live here, find accommodation and the cost of living, etc.? Another bus driver here, that bus driver you referenced wouldn't have been trained. If I'd say there was something lost with the language barrier there. She might have just finished training, but she wouldn't be on a route while still training. Everything else I've heard is correct, though. Absolutely terrible place to work. I'm planning on getting out pretty soon myself. The work-life balance here is non-existent with shifts. And all you have to do is look at the conditions we were driving under during the hot weather to see how much crap management give out about our well-being. Don't give up my details. He says that bus driver wouldn't have been training. She must have finished the training or she wouldn't be on a route while still training. She said to the people on the bus, I'm in training. That's what she said. So I agree with you. I mean, clearly you wouldn't be driving a bus on your own. You couldn't be. It wouldn't even be legal to drive a bus on your own if you were still training. You should have somebody on the bus with you. But anyway, to the phone lines, quick one. This back on the NDLS. My only experience of the NDLS, to be honest with you, was renewing a driving license years ago because I didn't have that public service card. I have it now, but I didn't at the time. And I have to say, I found the staff fantastic. I found it very efficient. And they're a very nice bunch of people. John, good morning.
Morning, I concur with that. I went in there, was it 3 weeks ago? And obviously, look, I would say to anyone, look, you have to have an appointment. You won't get in otherwise. Like it says this on the application when you get it down online. So you have to make an appointment. You have to keep the appointment. You have to turn up on the exact time, right? Or they're about.
You get a number then, don't you? There's a number comes up.
You do, yeah, but you won't get in. But when I was in there, like, I mean, then I was having a bit of banter with the lad. They were very nice and said they'd be on the counter. And I said, I hope I'll be alive. I said, for the next time, I'll be renewing it. And he said, well, he said, you're all right. He said, because he said, yesterday, he said, I had a lady in here, he said, and she walked out the door. He said, well, I'm full licence. And she was born in 1929. That makes her 97.
Fair play. Fair play.
So listening to the Callum at the last studio, so that 97-year-old Neil is probably a better driver than half the bus drivers.
Okay, so will we try and find Cork's oldest motorist then? Because you've got one at the age of 97 with a full license, and clearly there would be medical. Forgive me now, I don't mean to be in any way disrespectful, but you'd need medical checks at that stage, wouldn't you, that other people wouldn't need?
Well, like, you have to go to your doctor, and the doctor has to fill up the form. There is a form for that. The doctor fills up the form, signs it, stamps it, and you bring that in with you then, right?
So, yeah.
But there are
do you do an eye test, I'm wondering?
But they also do a test when you're going. They ask you to read, like, I mean, different passages of a pamphlet that's on the counter in front of you to see how good you are. It's just in case you probably bribed the doctor or something.
But,
But I tell you, a couple of years ago, I know the woman said it, believe it or not, but there was a lady down in Middleton, and she was driving, and she was 100 years of age. 100.
Amazing. Oh, my God.
There definitely is a 97-year-old out there because, okay. I mean, the man told me straight out, like, I mean, she was born in 1929. She went out the door, he said, at 97 with a full license.
An independent lady that likes to drive her motor car.
And God bless her that she may drive for another couple of years.
And has the freedom to do so. Well said, John. Appreciate that. Take care.
Thanks.
Much obliged. Text 0868104106. I was a bus conductor in London way back in the early 70s, Neil. The drivers had to do training on a skid patch. It was an area of ground that was flooded with water. The trainee driver drove onto it. The trainer would suddenly pull the handbrake to put the bus into a skid to simulate hitting ice. I wonder if TFI drivers are tested like this. I would think not. I think we could be in for serious accidents in the winter by what I'm hearing on your programme at the moment, says Donald. Thank you for that. Bus conductor in London back in the 70s. I bet that was a... I imagine it's a challenging job, but I bet it was a lot of fun as well. Bus conductors now, of course, are a thing of the past. On the Carrigaline bus, we had a foreign driver who got lost going from one side of Carrigaline to the other. Would you believe it? My husband had to stay up front with him to direct him on his route. It's absolutely bizarre. Got a taxi from town to Blarney recently. Not a clue what he was doing, even using Google Maps. We had to ask him, what are you doing? Where are you going? The taxi driver was lost. And this is not meant in any way, shape or form to be down on people who are coming here for a new life. Don't get me wrong. These just happen to be the stories that people are sharing. I'm not a huge fan of Google Maps, to be honest with you. I think Google Maps can really lead you astray, particularly if you're overseas and hire cars. Just always beware of that. For some bizarre reason, it thinks it's doing you a favour by getting you to your destination by using all sorts of stupid secondary or third roads. So just be aware of it. Google Maps isn't always the best way to go. I was on the 215 route towards Clairoux. We were passing by the Commons Hotel on the opposite side of the road. The bus driver wouldn't stop. This man was Irish. So I think they really just don't particularly care. When I went down to confront the bus driver as to why he wouldn't stop, he said that the old man is banned. He ushered me off the bus. I hope anyone else on that bus can remember the appalling behaviour. So you're banned from the bus? Because he wouldn't stop at the bus stop and you asked him why. Oh, fairness. There are people driving here that shouldn't be driving. Many of them are coming from countries where they have absolutely no rules of the road in the first place, where you can do whatever you like. I've visited many of these countries and I can tell you what I'm saying is a fact. But if you come from another country, outside of the EU, for instance, you can't drive cars here unless you're from Ukraine, and they'll soon be, of course, part of the European Union. But you just can't come from another country, another continent, and drive cars without doing a test. Sure, it doesn't work that way. Please tell me you can't. Anyway, pick it up. Text 0868 104 106. We're back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Day 4 of our giveaway is in association with the Sandymount Hotel. So again, just before midday today, you'll be talking on a topic. Two callers. I'll give you 30 seconds each to talk on a topic of my choosing. Whoever does it best wins an overnight stay for two people, breakfast and dinner at the Sandymount Hotel. It's a beautiful hotel, great location, just there. Beautiful coastal setting with the Strand nearby and the Dart outside the door of the hotel. Bring you all the way to Dublin, whatever the case may be. So that's before midday today, overnight for two with breakfast and dinner on a night or a weekend of your choosing. So we'll open the phone lines for that. A lot of texts on different topics as well this morning regarding that monster, Bouchikar, who carried out the Parnell Square attacks. One thing that I found astonishing, says Anthony, is the fact that he is an Irish citizen. He's Algerian, but he got Irish citizenship. He's been here 25 years. Anthony says he needed an interpreter in court. This is barely mentioned, but is once again clear proof that citizenship is handed out like confetti at a wedding. Somebody that was given Irish citizenship needs an interpreter in court. You could not make it up. And then on the scrappage, yesterday it went live at 9 o'clock, and by 10:15, all 2,000 scrappage deals were gone. You got $5,000 to scrap the car and you got another $3,500 EV grant. So yesterday, 2,000 cars were scrapped, says Desi. I wonder how many of these were vintage or classic works of art that ended up being crushed, the likes of Volkswagen Beetles or Ford Escorts or Minis. The last time this scheme was introduced, a lot of very collectible cars were crushed that could have been auctioned and then restored. If there were cars from the 1990s onwards, that would be okay. But all that plastic chrome and plastic bumpers, they all look the same. One car company just copies the other. But if you look at a Volkswagen Beetle or a Leyland Mini or a Ford Escort, they're all so different and full of character. Just a sad rant from a sad petrol head. It feels like they're crushing history and art, says he. Thank you for that. And to a large extent, you're right. Everything now is plastic and everything is kind of like dull and not very, the classic look of cars from decades gone by. I mean, they came with their faults and problems. You know what I mean? I mean, they probably have perfected the motor engine now. They've never been done before. But it's just the whole design of the older cars. You are right. Some of the classics are absolutely beautiful. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Yesterday we were chatting about things regarding, and everybody is going to be heading off now that primary and secondary is out now. So it's all about heading on holidays and packing suitcases accordingly. And apparently there's a right way and a wrong way, and many of us bring things that we never need when we go on a fortnight's holiday. We bring too much when we head to the sun. But anyway, on things like that. Pete, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. Do you overpack?
I don't overpack, no, but I've got a story about a great auntie. She was my granddad's brother's wife. And
my granddad's brother's wife. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So me auntie Joan, my uncle Joe was my granddad's brother. So they had never been abroad ever. And he'd been a council worker, worked all his life, so he worked really hard, didn't get much holidays, and he saved up, and they were going to go abroad for the first time. And she got all her suitcase packed and everything, and he obviously wanted to carry it for her, so he picked it up, and it was really heavy. So he's like, well, what have you packed in this? And she was like, just everything we need. And he had a look, and there was a sack of potatoes inside a suitcase.
Spuds, like?
Spuds. A sack of potatoes was in the suitcase, and the reason why was because she'd misheard potato, and she thought it was potato, and she had literally packed a sack of spuds in her suitcase to spend. And he was like, "Why have you put the spuds in your suitcase?" And she's like, "Because we've got to spend them. That's what they use." Now, for weeks and weeks before the holiday, she'd been going around saying about funny money abroad. They all use funny money. Oh, it was great. It was like 43 years ago. I was like, so it'd be about 1982. I was with my granddad.
Your pesetas, is what people were saying to her. And she bought potatoes, thinking that potatoes. That's what the Spanish use for currency, is it?
Yes, that's what she did.
Oh, it was great. My God. Well, how did she feel when people told her the truth?
I honestly don't know about that side of it, but I can remember like Uncle Joe going, "Stupid woman."
I mean, like, that's not unknown to us Irish people. Unfortunately, sometimes you still meet Americans who think we have pigs in the parlour. But did she think that the Spanish still used a kind of a barter system? Is it?
She must have done. Yeah,
you pay for your hotel room in potatoes.
If she'd have took a couple of sacks, she'd have been a millionaire or something.
Where in England was she from?
She was from the northwest, a little small industrial town. So,
is that where you're from? Where's home for you?
I am literally a mix of everything. And my family makeup is Irish, English, Scots, and Welsh. So,
what's your accent?
My accent is very confused.
So is it unidentifiable then?
Some people say I sound Scouse. I can do quite a good Scouse accent. I can also do a Birmingham accent, a Cornish accent. And
go
whatnot.
On, well, let's go through these then. Do the Scouser.
How's it going, like, innit? Hey, what's going on, like, Neil? It's a great programme on the radio, just like, innit?
I love that accent. I love Liverpool people. Go on, what's next?
So we can do, it's great, isn't it? I love listening to the radio from Birmingham. It's great, don't you dare say I'm from Birmingham. And then you can get the old, how's it going there, Mr. Porter?
What's that? Is that Cornwall?
Yeah, Cornwall, yeah.
Oh man, I was in Cornwall a couple of weeks ago, right? I happened to be in Devon before it, and then it was up in the Cotswolds. The Cotswolds are the most beautiful place. I mean,
I find that part of England too flat. I grew up around mountains. I've got mountains in my blood, so it's a bit flat for me.
Notwithstanding that it's flat, it's the villages and the towns and the people, picturesque beyond words, just so beautiful. But when I moved down to Devon and Cornwall, right, I wanted to have the cream tea. Have you had their cream tea?
Yeah, I've had the cream tea.
Okay. But I kind of got into a bit of trouble when I was in, where was it I was in? It was in Devon first, and I was in this cafe, and we were having the cream tea. So you know what you get? You're aware of it. You get the pot of tea, you get the scone.
The cheese and the jam. The cream and the jam.
Funnily enough, the cream is very close to cheese.
Yeah, clotted cream.
It's very clotted and it's strong. It's not the kind of cream that we would have. It's almost like cream that's kind of slightly gone off, kind of, is it?
Yeah, it's a bit more thicker and a bit more tangy.
Okay, so I asked the woman behind the counter, just out of curiosity, what goes on first? Do you put the cream on first or do you put the jam on first? Are you aware of that debate between Devon and Cornwall?
There's a whole massive argument whether the jam goes on first or the cream goes on first.
Okay, so where are you with that?
I don't mind that. If I do it, I'll put jam on one side, put the cream on the other, and then squish the two pieces together. It all goes down the same, doesn't it?
You eat it as a scone sandwich then?
Yeah, I eat it as a scone sandwich.
You're not supposed to do that, lad. That's wrong.
No, I know, but...
You get two bites of the cherry, two different pieces. But in Devon, which is it? In Devon, they do it different to Cornwall. And before I knew it, the entire cafe were involved in my conversation about what goes on. At one stage, the chef in the kitchen hears me going on about what should go on first. And he comes out laughing. And everybody had an opinion. It was just so funny. It really was.
Yep.
I can't remember which is which, though.
Honestly don't know which way round it's supposed to be. I think it's probably cream and jam in Devon, and then jam, then cream in Cornwall.
I know what it is. In Cornwall, they put the jam on first and the cream on top. In Devon, they put the cream on first and the jam on top.
Yeah.
It's confusing, isn't it?
It is, and it all eats the same. Once it's in your mouth, there's not much difference.
Anyway, that's the debate that we had there when we were down along. Anyway, listen, good to chat with you, and I suppose your poor aunt has passed now at this stage, has she?
Oh, yeah, she's been gone about 30 years. But, I mean, that gave me a right smile on my face yesterday when you said about the overpacking suitcases, and I just went, I remembered that whole incident just clear as anything.
It kind of gets us into another topic of things that are misheard or misunderstood, you know, or words that in Cork, did you ever go to the hostable?
Yeah, hostable, yeah.
Hostable, yeah. That's one of them. Or I'd like to be more pacific about it.
Yeah.
Misuse or misheard or misunderstood words. Love to get some more of those on the air. Text 0868104106. How long are you here now, Pete?
16 years now.
Wow.
My parents moved over here 30 years ago. So
I'd love to give you one of our family passes to take a bunch of people with you on maybe one of our tourist attractions for a day. Would you fancy something like that?
I wouldn't say no to that, yeah. Okay. We've got the in-laws coming over soon, so.
Take them down to Spike Island.
Yeah, might do, yeah.
We'll say no more about that. Don't leave them behind or anything, but let's get them sorted with the family pass to Spike Island when they come over, because that is a very impressive place to go. Got some tickets for Natasha Bedingfield, lads, for tonight, and Dec Pierce on Saturday night, or the Marquee Masters at the Marquee gigs. Fancy any of those?
I'm busy tonight.
All right, my son. Well, I'll give them to those that aren't as busy, but I'll sort you out with the family pass for Spike, no problem.
Brilliant, nice one.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Pete. Stay in touch. Lovely to chat. Right. Take care. Actually, talking about tea and coffee and scones, whether or not you put the jam on first or the cream on first, but it's a big debate between Cornwallians and people from Devon. We were talking yesterday about the cost of a cup of coffee, and this was something that was kicked off by Vincent. Farron Coffee Shop is the best. It's in the old post office, says somebody by text. You were just talking about tea and scones. In Super Value and Bantry, you get tea for €2. You get tea for two and two scones for €7. The scones are fabulous and they're fine and big before you ask. They also refill the teapot for you. Oh, I love that. So that's for €3.50 a person, a scone and a tea. Well done, Vincent. I totally agree with everything you spoke about. We're being screwed inside out. A cup of tea in Dunn's, €2.75. Daylight robbery, says a texter. I was in the Gallery Cafe yesterday in Wilton. I asked for one slice of bread with my chips, and I was told the slice of bread would cost me an extra €1.50. For the slice of bread, nothing beyond a disgrace, says Colette. I have to say, I agree with you, because the entire slice pan would have cost about that. Never mind you paying €1.50 for a slice. Ask that Vincent fella to call down to me and I will show him my VAT bills. That's why the price of coffee and everything else has gone up. Restaurants and pubs are on their knees trying to stay open. It's not just pubs and restaurants. It's the whole country, no matter what business you're in. Tell Vincent to back off under his rock. Or else take it all out on Micheál Martin, says John Ford, trying to run a business. Text 0868104106.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
A lot of things float people's boats. Just listening to the price of coffee and Brown Thomas on your show yesterday with Vincent. I went to a bar before Paul Weller and was charged €20 for an Aperol Spritz and a Belgian beer nobody's ever heard of. Rip off Republic indeed. Well, I know of Belgian beers, but I have no idea what an Aperol Spritz is. It sounds quite tasty. Is it alcoholic? Is it alcohol-free? What is it? I will confer. Tea and a scone, or coffee and a scone, Seamus O'Reilly in Blackpool, €4.30. You can't bait it. Now, that is value. That is value. I think Vincent paid €9.50 or something for the equivalent, which was the tiniest cup of coffee he ever saw, and a fairly mediocre scone. We get breakfast on Monday mornings in three little piggies. Eggs, toast and coffee, €10. Oh my God, that's fantastic value. The whole lot for a tenner. That's the way it should be in the real world, isn't it? Time after time. Talking about scones, actually, I know I'm going off on one. I don't know if you've had clotted cream. It's actually very close to a cross between cheese and butter. It's the closest thing to butter. It's not like the way we would do, cream as a course. But when I had the cream tea, so you get two halves of the scone. So I decided to do it both ways. This is why I nearly got thrown out of the cafe in Devon, because I did it the Devon way and I did it the Cornwall way. So in Devon, you put the clotted cream on first and then the jam on top. And then I did the other half of the scone the Cornwall way, which would be the jam first and the cream on top. And I told the people in Devon that the Cornwall way was better. And it was nicer. It really was tastier to do it that way, to put the jam on first and then the cream on top. They were far from impressed. Well, you're shaking your head. Do you not agree with me? Like, if you do both of them, then you'll be able to make a call on it. Like,
but how they're going into your mouth and going around in your mouth?
It just tastes better.
How?
The jam first and the cream on top just tasted much better. It just did. It's a better
sense. Like, it makes no sense because you bite into it and it's all around your
mouth. I know, but it's different. The taste sensation was different for both of them.
I don't know. I think they're having you on.
No, I mean, there's a big debate down there for it. But like, I still would prefer, do you know, I'd love a scone with sultanas or raisins through it, right? And then blackcurrant jam first and cheddar cheese on top.
Yeah, I have never tried that.
That's a glorious thing.
And the Aperol Spritz is Aperol. You know the orange ones they do be drinking, all the ladies over in Spain and Italy? It's Prosecco, soda and the Aperol, and then there's a garnish of orange on top usually.
How much would you pay for that normally?
Abroad?
Here. He paid €20 for a Belgian beer nobody's heard of and an Aperol Spritz. €20.
Maybe 12. I'm not a fan actually. I don't like them.
€12 for an Aperol Spritz.
Maybe, let me just see. I don't know because I don't drink them. The vodka, soda water and lime is my new drink of choice now.
They're about €12, between 12 and 15 in town.
Yeah,
€15.
I know, and it's a bit of a scam, really, because it's soda water, a drop of prosecco, yeah, and what else? And the air pearl. Then, like, yeah,
yeah, I'm not a fan at all.
And you'd have it gone in about 2 seconds.
And the Hugo Spritz are another popular one as well. But again,
the new drink of the summer now is going to be a kind of a briny, vinegary flavour.
Oh, sounds fab.
I wasn't telling you about that.
Pickle juice, wasn't
it? It's called pickle juice. Oh. Tennis players use it for cramp.
Pass.
What's it called?
It's called pickle juice.
It's a cocktail or something.
I haven't got it now, but I was reading about it at the weekend. It's just literally a pickle juice over ice. And I think some people serve it with a shot of whiskey. It's appalling. It's like drinking the dregs of a gherkin jar.
Lovely. It's actually, yeah, pickle juice martini.
There you go.
In a martini glass.
So when you're out now being posh and, you know, flouncing around in cocktail dresses, that's what you should be drinking.
God, I'll pass.
Well, it'll keep you regular anyway, if nothing else. Text 0868104106. Now it's time to recap with regards to Willie. What a wonderful man. A great, great storyteller. Loves his city. Loves all of the culture of Cork, and went out to work when he was a young 14-year-old boy, working on fishing boats and throwing over nets, and he spent his life fishing on the Lee. Lovely chat with him yesterday, and he wanted to give me a three kilo salmon to auction off and give the proceeds to Penny Dinner. So job done there, right? Aaron gave €400 for the salmon, and Benny McCabe topped it up with an additional 500. What do you think of that, Willie?
Oh, fantastic, Neil, and tell him thanks very much.
€900. We would never have thought €900.
No, unbelievable, and they're very good.
Okay, so did you catch a few fish yesterday, Willie?
I tell you now, Neil, I caught a load of them, and I'm finished fishing.
Are all the tags done now, yeah?
All the tags are gone, and there was a shoal of them hit my net. And I had to give 11 back. I had 11 over, so...
That's because you're honest and you're following the rules.
Well, it just happened when they were in the net and I was taking them out. There was a fishery officer came on to check the logbooks and things. He's a lovely man. And I told him that we had a good few over, I said. And I didn't know it was 11 at the time because I was only taking them out of the net, but... there was 11 over. So
it sounds as if they're thriving, the salmon in the Lee. Isn't it true?
But sure, I told you that, sure.
Yeah.
It's the best. Like a salmon, Neil, goes away when he's a small boy, as I says, and he comes back about 2 years after a big boy. And she'll have her eggs about 2 feet from where she was born herself. It's the only fish that does that.
How do they do that? What kind of a radar network does a salmon have that they can get? Where do they go to when they leave?
Greenland. Greenland. They goes to Greenland, Neil. They spends their time in Greenland and they comes back. Like, they all heads off and they don't all head off together. They heads up dribs and drabs. But you could have salmon from Dublin. You could have salmon from Galway. You could have salmon all the way down the coast. And we'll have get our ones that were born in the river. Isn't it unbelievable?
So it's unbelievable when you think about the fact that for possibly hundreds or thousands of years, the same family of salmon, generation after generation, keep coming back to the upper part of the Lee to lay their eggs.
That's right. And that's after being proven that because though through the years, we used to give them samples of the scales and they... We have our own flock, as I says.
That's astonishing, isn't it? Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. That's why they call them the salmon of knowledge. That's how they got the name.
And how in the name of God can they find their way to and from Greenland? I heard a story there. Birds are similar like that. The tiniest of little birds can fly from where I'm sitting now down to, as an example, the Canary Islands or the tip of South Africa without one time ever landing, just continual flight.
I heard of them.
What the heck?
And there's an eel. The eel does it as well. The eel, but the eel is not a fish. We have the eels that are born in the Lee. They come back to the Lee.
Amazing.
And they don't know. They never found out where the eel goes. They goes to the deepest part of the sea when they goes back to sea. and they don't know exactly. It's like when a whale dies, they don't know where the whale goes to die.
Bottom of the ocean, isn't it? Just the seabed?
Bottom of the ocean. It just goes to the bottom. That's what I'm saying.
It's like the circle of life, isn't it?
There's an area in the Atlantic. There's thousands of bones down there, you know, of whales.
Amazing. So where is our salmon now at the moment?
He's inside now in Pat O'Connell's in the English Market. I left him there yesterday because, as I said, I had another lot of salmon, and I said it to the girl, and she said she'd look after him. I weighed him, I took him out and I weighed him. He's just a bit over 3 kilos, and they're looking after him because they have to keep him fine and fresh.
Well, that's where Aaron needs to go now to pick up and sort himself out.
Just mention that it's for the
penny dinners,
and they'll hand him straight out.
You're a mighty man, do you know that, Willie? Stay in touch, will you? Stay in touch.
And will you just look after the cash for yourself over?
I don't deal with the money at all. Emer and Viv look after all of that stuff.
Yeah,
so I'm getting the thumbs up here. Don't you worry about that. 900 subs will go to Penny Dinners.
It's a well-deserved place, as you know, Neil.
I do know it.
And Neil, thanks very much for that, because I always wanted to do something for over there. And what I'm going to do now, I'll get on next year if I'm alive. And I give another one for some other cause.
So why wouldn't you be alive? How old are you?
I'm getting not far off of 17 only.
No fear of you by another 25 odd years and you're there, not a bother.
Yeah, with the help of God.
With the help of God as well. You're only middle aged now, Willie boy.
I give a salmon for charity, and I gained with 21. I know 11 of them had to go back because they'd only 10 tags, but still.
Yeah.
When you do a good turn, you get it back. You don't realise it, but you get it back in 10 times over.
Well, listen, it's much nicer to be a pleasant person or a helpful person and a general person than a grinch or a grump. That's for sure, anyway. It takes an awful lot less effort.
The Cork people are known for that all over the world, for their charity and everything.
And you're amongst them.
Do you remember the African boy there? He had the Cork jersey on him, and they brought him back there last year.
What was that?
They were filming, RTE were filming out in Africa. There was a bit of a famine there.
Yeah.
And there was a young fella queuing up with his pasta. He had a Cork jersey on him. And they brought him and then one or two of his family back to Ireland for a little holiday.
I love it. Great story.
It was an old Cork jersey, you know, but that's the charity that the Cork people sends out to all these places.
Well, look, stay in touch, will you? Because we love listening to your stories, and it was great to catch up yesterday. And thank you for that. I have to say, Benny McCabe has already sent the 500 to Penny Dinners, and we'll do likewise with Aaron's 400. All right, Will?
Brilliant. And tell him, I'm no problem, though, Neil. Just mentioned that they're looking after him, sorry, because, Neil, I didn't bring him home at all, because they have the facilities.
Spot on. You made the right call. Give it to O'Connell's. They're going to sort him out. Everything will be good. He's under ice.
Yeah.
Nice one, Willie.
All right. Thanks, Neil.
God bless, boy. Take care. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. I'm listening here in France, listening to you on the radio, as I have been for years. Just wanted to send you a message to say I think you're all brilliant. There's something special about hearing a Cork voice that's familiar and humorous when you're living away from home. You have a great way about you. Stop now. I hate all of these kind of compliments. I just get very uncomfortable. But at least somebody finds me funny and real, which is nice. It's like as if I'm sitting in the room having an old chat with you. Fair play. You're bringing a bit of Cork all the way over to France today, and I want to thank you for that, says Mark Casey. I read it out because you're kind enough to send it. And good morning to you in France. I hope you're not suffering with too much heat. It's been tough enough there, I'm told, over the last couple of weeks. But thanks for listening. People all over the world actually are listening to this program, which is great. So you got loads of different options now. You got the live radio program, you got the podcast, you got the receipt with the you got the repeat and everything. There are different ways. So you have people all over the world listening at different times, which is absolutely wonderful. Listen to me, Nuala, you rang earlier and I was very sorry to hear the story about your dog. But we're trying to call you back to get you on air because I know you do want to talk on air, but your number's not connecting with us, but we would like to chat. So just call us back there if you don't mind, Nuala. Pick up the phone there on 0818 104 106. Talking about packing, all of this started because it went off on a bit of a one. You take a 10kg bag to the sun and you pack all sorts of stuff that you don't need, including, stupidly, two Nike sweatshirts. Who needs two Nike sweatshirts at 32 degrees in Spain? Apparently, I thought I did. But anyway, Joseph! Can you hear me? I think he's got the hairdryer on. He just can't put it out of his hand, even though he's retired. Joe!
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Talk to Joe. I want to talk to Joe. Are you off?
Good morning, Neil. You're talking to Joe, and welcome back.
Are you off to Tenerife?
I just blow drying my hair.
I knew it was a blow dryer. I just knew it was.
Yeah.
Where are you going anyway, yourself and Darren?
Well, we're going up in September in Tenerife for Darren's 50th.
Why are you blow-drying your hair? Where are you going today? Are you going up to Hayfield Manor to meet Ursula von der Leyen or do her hair or something?
Not at all. I'm just going over to the village shopping centre, but you know me, I have to look right.
And you have to blow-dry the hair to do a bit of shopping?
No, I just take a bit of wet out, then a bit of curling cream afterwards then to give it a bit of bump.
In case you meet anybody?
Well, you know what I mean. People are expected of me now at this stage, and I'm a retired gentleman. I have to look
retired gentleman. You have standards that have to be met.
I tell you, I wasn't very retired yesterday over at Ryan's place with Carol and Emo and all that. We're doing the garden at the moment. Mother God, I'm rolling wheelbarrows and digging
she calls it a pergola when the word is actually pergola. Is that the pergola you're building? At John Birmingham's?
Yes, and Carol Hage is doing the sensory garden and talking about the Sergeant Major. She's brilliant.
That's Emer's sister.
I know, that I'm saying. She's fabulous. And Emer is fabulous as well. Emer was giving it loads yesterday.
It says she was just standing around ordering people.
Not at all, no. She was digging and pulling and little. I'll tell you though, Carol is unbelievable. She's saving every little plant on the universe. I said, that'll reward you now if you save that. Neil, I'd be dumping everything into the rubbish.
And all of these people are giving all their time, aren't they?
Absolutely wonderful. There's a guy called Andrew. You know Andrew, actually. He's a carpenter. He did a lot of work.
Sound. He's sound. He did the Rebel Rebuild and then some gouger robbed his tools. Anyway.
Neil, you should have seen me. I was pushing the wheelbarrow up a hill, right?
You were actually doing physical work.
But coming back and talking, I wasn't getting anywhere. And then Andrew comes along, one push and the wheelbarrow's on top
that's
of it.
That's because he's doing this all his life. The heaviest thing you ever lifted was a scissors.
And we're going to have we're going to have a party on the 4th of August, Neil, for all the volunteers and everyone that donated and the whole lot.
I'm delighted it's working out so well.
Oh, it's just fun. The lads are going to love it. This weather will be amazing to get out now, enjoy it, and the pergola will be up and flowers will be lovely and it'll be great.
Well, come here. Do you know when you go, I don't know if Darren is as bad as you, probably not, who could be, but as you go on holidays for, a couple of weeks, will you have a 10kg bag or
Neil, you have no idea. We bring so many bags. If we're going away for 3 days, it's even over to London, we have so many bags. But you see, Darren starts packing in July to go away in September.
He must have a lot of time on his hands, that young man.
The cases is in the spare room, and then we have to do a dress rehearsal. So what we do then is say, if we're invited out to dinner somewhere special, we'll have this outfit. But just in case, we'll have this. We have something for the morning. We have something going down to the pool. We have something for lunchtime. We have something in the evening.
I wash T-shirts in a sink. Like, how many outfits a day do you have?
That's very common, Neil. Jesus.
No, nobody knows that I've washed a white T-shirt. How are they going to know? Soap? No.
Everything is packed perfectly. And there's an outfit for every occasion. There's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and 3 outfits a day.
A day?
And that's now a day, yeah. And that's nothing to do then with the moisturiser cream that goes as good. Pre-sun, after-sun.
You've lost it all on yourself. How many bags do you have?
The moisturiser face, the little stuffed bags under the eyes, the gel.
None of that stuff. I have to let you in on a secret. None of that stuff works.
Oh, I know. Have you seen my face?
Does it work, like?
Oh, God, Neil, absolutely. I look fabulous. Like, I'm 66 and everyone think I'm only 50.
Now, just hearing a lot about, you know, this collagen buzz that everybody's on now, it's surely be God, that's a farce.
sculpture is a new thing now, putting sculpture into your face, working for the collagen. Bring so it all on, Neil, and I'll take it all that's given to me. I need everything now that's going.
I'd be your holiday partner nightmare, washing white T-shirts in the sink in the bathroom.
Neil, Darren Kilkenny, my husband, is unbelievable. He does all the... I haven't packed a bag in 15 years. He does the whole lot. I love it. And he unpacks and he packs. He does the whole lot. And everything is folded up, hung up. Everything has a place. And it's lovely. I just put out my hand, touch what I'm wearing today. I'd have a different togs every day for the beach.
Togs?
Every day. And then I'd have a little flowy outfit for going up, you know, if you're going up for a cocktail or a coffee or something like that.
You need intervention. You're just showing off. Like.
Sometimes our bags are way, way, way over the limit and we have to, you know, we have to open there at the airport. Oh, my God. It's hilarious what we'll take out, what we'll leave behind, what we'll carry on our shoulders instead. And the air hostess or whatever the check-in guard is looking at it. Oh, my God, lads, how long are you going away for?
And you know everything that you actually bring then, the three outfits a day, which is six outfits a day for the two of you. Do you wear all of that over the course of the holiday?
Half the time, no. I have to admit, no. I get comfortable in something then and I say, I love these shots and I'm in them nearly and all the other stuff.
What did you learn from it then?
Would you then, Neil, end up then getting a spare case and buying another case to bring back stuff? You know, you go into Zara's and these.
If I went on holidays with you, I'd be exhausted.
Oh my God. I'd say we've spent so much money. And not only that, then the customs one day coming back from Thailand ripped our cases open, took out everything, took out massage oil, all the lovely things you'd buy on holidays and kept it.
Why?
And coming back.
Why? Why? You're not allowed to take anything over 100 mils, is it?
But I didn't think massage oil would make, you know, would be in part of that. Lovely aroma oil got in Thailand and it was gorgeous. I'm looking forward to coming home for lovely.
Do you know something? I think it must be great to be a gay man. Do you know that? I'm jealous, like, because I'm not saying for a moment that in gay relationships people don't have children or adopt children, whatever the case may be, or have surrogate babies and things. But let's say you didn't, right? Everything in your world evolves around you, doesn't it?
All the time.
Isn't it a wonderful thing? Like, you have no commitments. What?
Yeah. I'd be too selfish to have kids, Neil. There is no way I'd want a child or happen to. I don't know how people.
I know that, but some gay couples do, and I'm all for that, and good luck to them. But let's say if you didn't, you have none of that expense whatsoever. Like, what you have, what you earn, it's yours 100%.
Yeah, sure. I mean, many people go off and buy a cologne for €189. I'll tell you about that, and there's no smell of it. I'm still spraying it. I had more smell of sweating yesterday than I had off the cologne. Only totally, like...
I told you, go away and get a plastic bottle of Brut.
You're so self-absorbed, like, I'm scary, like, I have to have the outfits, and I love them. Gosh, why not? No other expense. What did they call it? The pink pound. No wonder
It's the pink pound.
Yeah.
All right. Go on. We'll chat again. Mind yourself.
Bye, my friend. Thank you very much.
Good luck with everything you're doing at the Pergola, John Birmingham Centre. And I'm sure I'll talk to him before Tenerife anyway. But if nothing else, we'll talk to him himself and Darren are in Tenerife. Text 0868 104 106 after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Pick up the phone 0818 104 106. Text 0868 104 106. Phone lines are open now. You want to talk on a topic, ladies and gentlemen. We'll take callers 9 and callers 10. 0818 104 106. I give you 30 seconds to talk on a topic of my choosing. Whoever does it best within 30 seconds wins the daily prize, an overnight stay for two people with breakfast and dinner in the Sandymount Hotel. Right? Get dialing on that. I'll give you your topic when you're live on air. 0818 104 106, callers 9 and 10. Talking about live on air, quick call from the Sinn Féin TD, Tommy Gould. I was telling Aaron this morning, he was in the Dáil actually, and he's really annoyed and very upset on behalf of many people living in and around Cork Prison. The clock's ticking on a particular issue regarding that for members of the public. You need to be aware of it. Tommy, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How you doing?
Okay, it would be fair to say this is a broken promise, isn't it, regarding the old prison? For sure it is.
100%, Neil. When the new prison was built 10 years ago, commitment was given to the community, residents. I was involved with the groups then. They said the old prison would be turned into maybe a training area, a cafe, education, maybe a youth centre, a park or a playground. And also the heritage and the history is where Thomas Kent was imprisoned and where he was executed and buried for 99 years. So there could have been loads of really positive things went into the old prison.
But instead, the plan is to build a super prison adjacent to the existing one.
It's actually, they're going to build two prisons, Neil. They're going to build one for women that will house 100 women, and they will build a second one that will house an additional 230 men.
On the site of the old prison?
On the site of the old prison. Now, how they're going to get that amount of prison and cells into the old prison, to me, is just unbelievable.
So technically, that's three prisons then?
Three prisons in the Glen. Like, I believe, we know we need more prison spaces, but there should be in a greenfield site, nothing in the middle of a residential.
And is there no talking to Jim O'Callaghan, the Department of Justice, the government on this?
Well, Neil, they were supposed to build one, a super prison in Taunton Hall back in 2019. And what happened, that was shelved for some reason, and now they're throwing two prisons into the Glen and thinking that people will say nothing and they'll get away with it.
Where was Taunton Hall?
I think that was in Dublin. I don't know the exact location, but I know that it had been earmarked for a super
prison. So what we know is that Cork Prison is 131% capacity. It's over capacity. Always has been. It's like 410, 420. So they need more space.
But Neil, they've known that for years. So, like, there was talk that they were going to retrofit the old prison, they were going to keep it. No, we disagreed with that, but you can imagine that would have opened up the prison a lot quicker. And people would have said a way to dilute our argument. But the plan now is to level the old prison.
Level it and build two, one for men, one for women. And how do the locals feel about this? Because it's a huge catchment area. There's lots of chimney pots.
And the thing about it, this goes right into people's back gardens. I've met with people now over the years who've had gangs and people running through their back gardens, throwing drugs up over the wall. We've had some people and prisoners are able to kind of just see out through the windows.
I've seen the videos.
The comments.
Yeah. I've seen
so
the videos.
So the thing about it, we were given commitments that the prisoners wouldn't be able to see the people who live in the Glen. That, like, they can hear prisoners talking about people, and sometimes the language, like, they can't leave their children out the back to play or outside to play. Like, where else would this be acceptable, Neil? Like, you're around a long time now, you've commentated on that.
I don't believe prisons belong in residential settings anymore. I really don't. But that's just my opinion. But people are entitled to appeal, are they? People are entitled to object.
Yes, and what happened was there's some issues with imposter at the moment. I put in an objection on environmental grounds 2 weeks ago, and actually I missed the deadline because it took 6 days to be delivered. Now, I put my objection in last Friday, and it arrived Wednesday, but tomorrow is the final date, and I've been back and forth today with prison service, and I finally today have an email address. So what I'm asking is that people would use the email address, if they've sent it in by post already, that they might just put in the email. And I'm asking anyone, like, this just doesn't affect the Glen or Old Yarl Road or Dillon's Cross or St. Luke's. This affects the whole north side, and I would say the whole city. Having three prisons in the north side, I don't believe is right. And I'm asking people to
think it would happen on the south side, Tommy?
Not a hope, Neil. Okay. Not a hope.
Okay. And what's the email address?
It's IPS Estates, ESTRTES BC@irishprisons.ie. No, I'll text it to you, to Seamus, so you can put it out there. So it's IPS Estates BC@irishprisons.ie.
Is that BC or DC? Sorry, BC.
BC. Okay. B for Barry, C for Cullum.
All one word. IPS Estates BC. All one word?
Yes.
Okay. At
irishprisons.ie.
Okay, I'll give it out again in a few minutes' time before quitting time. Yeah.
The one other thing is people must put in the headline that is the Cork prison site, and people have to put in the full name and their address for it to be a valid submission or objection. And we're really encouraging everyone. like to put in your old thoughts, because like, do people really think that we need two extra prisons in the Glen? I don't believe we do.
We need prisons though, because unfortunately there's I'm just a little bit concerned the amount of judges that I'm hearing these days are giving suspended sentences because the jails are full. That doesn't make sense.
But Neil, the government owns land like Kilworth.
Oh, I know,
supposed to be a prison, right?
Yeah.
Like, and what I'm suggesting, it should be on a greenfield site, on a major road and on a bus route, and that takes it out then.
Okay.
The jails for, like, can you imagine the kids up in the Glen looking at prisons every day?
I got you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Tommy. I'm out of time for now. Appreciate it. Do stay in touch, though. So it's IPS Estates BC, all one word, at irishprisons.ie. And in the heading bar, put Cork Prison Site, full name and address, and a reason to object. And hopefully there'll be power in numbers. I'll give that out again in a few minutes' time. Text 0868104106. Talking on topic next.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
If you want to object to the three prisons that are proposed to be built on the north side, IPS Estates BC, all one word, at irishprisons.ie. Talk on a topic, last bit of business, your opportunity to win an overnight stay for two at the Sandyman Hotel, breakfast and dinner in the Sandyman Hotel. Antoinette Manning is standing by in Carrigaline. First up, Sarah in Cove. Sarah, good morning.
Hi, how are you, Ollie?
Good. I'm good. Oh, good. I got a number here between 1 and 10 for you, and then I'll give you your topic. So pick a number.
Number 4.
1, 2, 3, 4, 4, number 4. My number 4 is my favourite celebrity. You have 30 seconds on my favourite celebrity, Sarah and Cove, and your clock starts now.
My favourite celebrity would be Big Brother, because he's a brilliant person on the show, and he won it years ago, and I really enjoyed the show. And I really enjoyed watching him all the times he was on. And he had a bit of special needs, but he was brilliant.
What's his name?
Oh, sorry. I can't remember. It was so long ago. It was like in the 2000s.
Ain't easy, you see. It's not easy when you spring it on someone 30 seconds on a topic that you don't know about in advance. Sometimes one can freeze. Okay. Not to worry, girl, not to worry. Don't let it hold me. I won't let it hold it against you. You can try again at another time if you so choose. Let's go to Antoinette Manning in Carrigaline. Antoinette?
Good morning, Neil.
Okay, so you're shooting into an open goal here now. Like, there's no disrespect to Sarah, but you can hardly not win, right?
Hopefully.
Number between 1 and 10.
Number 3, please.
Well, all right, number 3. What I love about Cork, 30 seconds. It's in the bag, lads. 30 seconds, Antoinette. What I love about Cork, starts now.
Right. What I love about Cork is the people. They're so friendly, so open, so welcoming. You'd never feel alone if you walk the streets of Cork. You'll always get someone to say hello, to smile. If you're looking for directions, you can go no better place than Cork. People would nearly guide you to where you need to go. There's so much to see in Cork. In the city centre alone, there's the English Market, there's the library, you have down the Marina Market. You have so much to see in Cork. You see
that is fantastic.